next generation. The summer's biggest CD release party, this Friday night at the State Theater. The most anticipated CD release and local concert of the year. Featuring Buddha Full of Rhymes, Critical Bill, James Whalen, Seed, and Rib. Doors open 6 p.m., 18 and over welcome. Tickets for this next generation CD release party are only $15. Includes admission and a free CD and DVD showcasing the new acts on Westbound Records. Get your tickets now online at statetheater.com or call 313-961-5451, extension 14. The State Theater on Woodward Avenue next to the Fox in downtown Detroit. Westbound Records, the next generation. This Friday night at the State Theater. Get more info at westboundnextgen.com.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. People listening in our immediate WRIF area and those of you listening all around the country, all around the world at WRIF.com or all the other websites that are broadcasting this program. And also, we're going to be podcasting now. So after, probably about 4 a.m. Eastern time this coming morning, you'll be able to download this show directly from WRIF.com. In a way, I'm not sure why I'm saying this. I'll probably send some of you to bed and say, oh, I'll just download it tomorrow. But listen up. It sounds better live the first time around, and you get to call in at 313-298-WRIF. And if you'd like to email me, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think what I'm going to do, there you go. I'm going to just turn me down. Yeah, I think I was kind of, ooh. I got to turn my headphones down a little as well. Well, as usual, lots going on. Detroit over the weekend, in fact, the whole week was just this scene of this immense party, and it probably will shock a few of you, those of you in Northern California, probably Rich in Boulder, who is one of our listeners and very concerned about the dominance of automobiles as our mode of transportation. One understands that, given that so far it takes internal combustion engines to run it all, which means oil, which means war in the Middle East, intervention in the Middle East, environmental damage beyond belief and all of that. But anyways, this is the Motor City, even though, gee, a lot of it has gone elsewhere in the world and even just across the borders into Ontario where there's new plants being built, mainly because, hey, the automakers can reduce their health costs because they don't have to pay for health costs because like every other modern nation in the world, Canada has a national health program. Here, you're on your own or the company or the union has to pay it, so that adds a lot of costs. Well, the event is called the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise. Now, Woodward Avenue is one of the main drags in Detroit, big street that was laid out by, I can't remember his name, but the guy that laid out New York City as well. You know, the kind of deal with spokes going out from the center of the city. And Woodward Avenue had the honor, or at least the historic note of having the first mile of paved highway in the world. And what do they say? The rest is hysteria. Anyways, the Woodward Dream Cruise, what it is all these old cars, hot rods and cars from the 30s and 40s, probably mostly from the 50s, but even the 60s, and all done up, all sorts of custom cars and restored cars and the kind of custom cars that were big in the 50s and all that. And usually they get about 40,000 classic cars. I didn't count them. In fact, I don't know, seemed to be less classic cars per volume of traffic. In fact, a few times I was out there looking, I'm thinking, this just seems like Woodward Avenue traffic. So this is going to probably stun a lot of you who aren't in the Detroit area and are listening to Night Call. And that is, how many people do you think we're watching? This is cars. Well, already we know that there's a lot of people coming in, 40,000 classic cars. Last year, there was 1.7 million people lining the streets of Detroit, Detroit's Woodward Avenue, from probably mostly Nine Mile Road, as we call it, up to Long Lake Road or something like that. Anyways, it was down because of a lot of rain, 1.1 million only. Only 1.1 million idolizing the automobile. So I know Northern California listeners, Rich in Boulder, shocked. I know you're shocked. But that's the way it goes here in the Motor City. Well, some people, hey, Rich is always calling in and singing the praises, rightly so, of bicycles. And that was what was featured down at Life at the Lazy W Ranch, George Bush's ranch. I don't know if he calls it the Lazy W, but he spends a lot of time there. He was there August 6th when he, in 2001, when he received a memo saying, Osama bin Laden will strike in the United States. And he said, ho-hum, went off to cut some brush or something like that. Anyways, he spent, he being Bush, spent 2 hours on Saturday bicycling 17 miles across his ranch with Lance Armstrong. You know, Lance Armstrong, the seven-time Tour de France winner, and also a critic of the war in Iraq. I wonder why Armstrong did it. Maybe he talked to him about it. Although, according to the reports I heard, that Armstrong let him take the lead. And Bush had a very trenchant observation about Armstrong. He said, he's a good rider. Yeah, well, thank you. There weren't any reporters along. And at the end of the ride, Bush presented Armstrong and the others who rode with them. This was like Secret Service agents and people like that. They're riding with red, white, and blue Tour de Crawford. Tour de Crawford. If you're listening, everybody, even if you're listening anywhere around the world, you know where Crawford, Texas is. Bush's Lazy W Ranch and Ted Nugent, the Motor City madman, who is not a killer. If you don't know who he is, he's not like a killer. He's a rock and roll guy. But he's one of the few rockers, you know, that Republican and supports Bush and what have. And he moved on to Crawford for some unknown reason. Actually, he's going to be playing here in Detroit. Maybe we should ask him. Anyways, so everybody that rode with him got red, white, and blue Tour de Crawford T-shirts and cycling socks with the presidential seal on the ankle. And I know when we're spending tens of billions, hundreds of billions on this fool's war in Iraq, that a few hundred bucks probably shouldn't matter. But why do we, the taxpayers, have to pay for little gifties for Bush's guests at the Lazy W Ranch? I mean, does that hit anybody else the wrong way, or am I just being, like I always am, partisan? And probably if we had to buy a toothpick, I'd be up in arms. But there's so much money wasted. This is just sort of indicative of it all. I don't know if you've ever heard me say, but whenever you see those signs that are real partisan in back of Bush, those are, you know, we paid for those as well. You know, they're trying to, like, run some Social Security ruse or something like that. You know, we're paying for all that. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. And email calltalkyes@yahoo.com is our number. Let's see. After the ride is first with Bush, a fellow Texan. Armstrong, as you know, is a cancer survivor. He had about a 50-50 chance of beating cancer. He beat it and, you know, went on to win all those Tour de France. Here's what Armstrong said to USA Today. The biggest downside to a war in Iraq is what you could do with that money. What does a war in Iraq cost a week? $1 billion? Maybe $1 billion a day? Well, Lance, it's not that anywhere near that, but it's tons of money. As much as $200 billion, maybe $300 billion, depending on how you're counting. So that's all been spent on, you know, these contractors, Halliburton and all those folks, just giving it away wholesale in the form of cash to corrupt Iraqi contractors and what have you. And so, yeah, we could do a lot of stuff. Cancer research, alternative fuels, a national health program, smaller classes. But no, we're gonna fight this war. The budget for the National Cancer Institute is $4 billion, says Lance. The time that has to change. It needs to become a national priority again. Let's see. I've got some other stuff stapled to that. From Maureen Dowd. Sunday's, and it must be a few days ago, August 17th, Biking Towards Nowhere. He's talking about, she's talking about the planned rides. The current President Bush was pressed about how could he be taking 5 weeks to ride bikes and nap and fish and clear brush, even though his occupation of Iraq has become a fiasco. W said, I think it's also important for me to go on with my life, to keep a balanced life. I mean, they're making this up, folks. There's people over there dying and killing and destroying and getting killed and getting wounded and getting maimed and getting post-traumatic stress disorder and all that. And Bush says, I think it's important for me to go on with my life. What do you think? 313-298-WRIF. pressed about how he could ride his bike while refusing to see a grieving mom of a dead soldier who's camped outside his ranch, he added, "So I'm mindful of what goes on around me. On the other hand, I'm also mindful that I've got a life to live and will do so." That's the big F you, right? I'm just going to do it, because that's what he's done his whole life, just taking it easy. Anything more on here? Oh, down at the Lazy W Ranch, yeah. Bush takes pride in his six-day-a-week workout regimen, and last week he showcased the statistics of his heart monitor for a group of reporters who rode with him. He burned 1,500 calories in a two-hour ride. That's tough, I'll tell you. Bush says exercise helps sharpen his thinking. Now, if that's the case, I'm way for it. Let's see. His critics view his exercise obsession as an indulgence that takes time away from other priorities. Well, I have to say, I mean, I could do exercise and sports 6 days a week as well. In fact, I could do it 7 days. But whenever things start pressing in on me, if I have important deadlines to meet, if I've got stuff to prepare for radio, if I have publishing deadlines like I do now, I just got to skip it. And here I am. All I'm running is small fry stuff. Nothing. Nobody lives or dies whether I meet my deadlines or not. But here's this man that's supposed to be managing this war, which, of course, as someone said in these quotes, is a total fiasco. And he says, "I got my life to live." Yeah, while others die. That's cute, isn't it? Let's see. Cindy Sheehan said she was opposed. Yeah, said he was taking too much time. Who left her vigil on Thursday to tend to her sick mother, has said she believes Bush should take fewer bike rides to have more time to focus on the nation's work. Well, I agree with that. Your thoughts on that? 313-298-WRIF. Here's one. This is one of these things. So we're talking about life and death. We're talking about the war. We're talking about how our tax money is spent. We're talking about the crisis of schools and the infrastructure and tons of other stuff like that. And this could be one of those things that I'm just kind of bringing in almost for comic relief. And although it's serious. It's serious. And who knows, we could wind up talking about it. Men do have trouble hearing women. According to scientists, men are always being accused by women of not listening to them, and now they have an excuse. According to what they've found, women's voices are more difficult for men to listen to than other men. This is, Neuralmage said researchers at Sheffield University in Northern England discovered startling differences in the way the brain responds to male and female sounds. By the way, you can still call in 313-298-WRIF. Patience, if you're ringing, please. Men deciphered female voices using the auditory part of the brain that processes music, while male voices engaged a simpler mechanism. That's interesting. So the female voice, according to the researcher, the female voice is actually more complex than the male voice due to differences in the size and shape of the vocal cords and larynx between men and women, and also due to women having greater natural melody in their voices. This causes a more complex range of sound frequencies than the male voice. Now, I don't know. All right. There's somebody. Well, you know what? I was going to talk more. But why don't I just see what you have to say. This is a little early. Usually I rave on for about a half an hour. But there's a concert, a couple events in Washington I want to tell you about. But we'll wait. From Lake Orion, our first caller, it's Jim. Jim, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yes, sir, Peter.
Hi.
I have taken it upon myself to make up an impeach Bush Cheney sign, and I stuck it right on my front door so everybody could see it.
Yeah.
And, nobody seems to really care. I mean, one neighbor did come by, and she says, "Well, what good is it going to do to impeach him?"
Well,
I says, "You're talking about Bush and Cheney, two guys, I mean, you talked about Bush with his cardiovascular thing.
Yeah.
Now, we got a vice president that's had a couple of heart transplants or bypasses, I believe. And so there's a real good
and has a monitor. And Cheney is very fearful of an electronic assassination attempt. He's got all sorts of ways to guard himself. So, but he's afraid that someone will zap his what do you call this? Pacemaker. Pacemaker. Right. Yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to point out, the reason he should be impeached is he lied under oath. He said there was weapons of mass destruction over there, and there was none.
Well, he wasn't under oath. He just lied.
Well, yeah, but still, they take the oath, you know, they'll uphold the
oath of office. Well, there you go. I mean, there is high crimes and misdemeanors, Jim. I agree with you completely. There is, around Iraq, there's impeachable offenses. And if anyone ever really looked deeply into, remember what we talked about before the war in Iraq as a phony issue was conjured up by Karl Rove, about Enron and the relationship of the Bush administration to energy policy and the guy that used to call him what was the chair of Enron? I forgot already.
I forgot that too. But
see how successful they were. He used to call him Blabba Baby.
And don't forget his brother Neil, who had taken $40 million from the Colorado Savings alone and got away with it.
Well, they always get away with it. That's right. The whole deal is that the wealthy, the elite, the powerful, the privileged never have to pay the consequences of their act. There's this rich white kid in Oklahoma City that tried to get on a plane with a bomb, a real one. And the ex-Republican mayor of Oklahoma City said, oh, he didn't really mean it. He was a nice kid. I mean, if his name would have been Hassan or something like that, he'd be in a brig labeled an enemy combatant. All right, Jim, thank you very much. It's almost coming to me. It's like Ken Lay, right? I didn't get any messages on the screen or anything like that. Ken Lay was the chair of Enron, and that Bush used to call him Kenny Baby, right? Wasn't that it? All right, let's go down to Florida. Stuart, Florida, it's Paul. Paul, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
I just wanted to say thanks. I've lived up in Detroit for many, many years, and just recently, 2 years ago, moved to Stewart. And just wanted to say thanks for the website. And took 2 weeks to get it all set up on the stereo, and I didn't want to get into politics, but just wanted to say thanks to the ref.
Well, thank you. And, hey, you know, we're also broadcasting in HD radio, and on your computer, if you go to WRIF, you can hear what's called Riff 2, and Jay Hudson, the producer and phone screener for the Night Call show, does announcing on there as well.
Yeah, I was trying to get through with the HD, and I'm just having a little trouble with the computer and all that, hooking up with Dolby Digital or, you know.
Ooh, eventually, in order to get it on a radio, you're going to have one of these HD radios. And so right now, Riff is broadcast. If you have one of the few people that has an HD radio, you can get the signal, which is much clearer, which is much better. You can get both WRIF and Riff 2, so there's a lot of options. Well, thank you, Paul, and thank you for saying thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Peter Werby here with you, 313-298-WRIF. I think he meant the RIF website, right, WRIF.com. You can go there to get the details on this show's podcasting and also Motor City Riffs, which precedes this. My website is peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. And here's Steve and Fraser. Or as we say, Frazier. Go ahead, you're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing great.
I'm doing fine myself. I had a question on the gas prices.
Good, let's go back to that. Good idea. What's up?
Why do they need to be almost $3 a gallon? I have a brand new Ford F-150, and I'm paying a good $60 a week.
Ah!
And I'm only 20 years old.
Yeah, I got a full-size Ford, and I thought, this thing doesn't get great mileage, but what the hell? Now I'm thinking, man,
yeah.
Man, wow.
What are we paying for a barrel of oil?
Well, now it's over $60, but Gene sent me this piece that said, how much does it cost to make a gallon of gas? And it's from about 6 years ago. But, you know, there's fixed costs, right, of all the labor that it takes to and the machinery, and the only thing that's variable is the cost of the of how much it is a gallon. I think here it was like $12 a gallon or something like that. Or, I'm sorry, $12 a barrel $12 a barrel. Oh. Yeah, of which there's 40-something gallons in there. But one way you can see, Steve, that we're getting ripped is that if the prices just went up according to how much more they were paying per barrel to the like the refineries, to the suppliers, well, then their profits would remain constant because they would keep raising their prices in order to keep having the same profits. But the profits, particularly of ExxonMobil, but all the others as well, have skyrocketed. So essentially, they're ripping us.
Right.
That's the long and the short of it.
I'm sick of Michigan. I got to get out of here.
Well, wait. Where are you going to go? It's more money in Canada. It's more money. It's like over $3 in California.
Well, not just that. It's just unemployment and everything.
Oh.
Just,
how about, wait a minute, 20 years old, you could go to Iraq because you know how much gas is there?
My brother went over there for a year.
Wow. 6 cents a gallon. That's how much, because you and I are subsidizing with our tax dollars the Iraqi fuel prices. So they pay 6 cents a gallon for gasoline, and we're paying, like went down a little, 257. All right, thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate your call. Here, Garrett writes in from Plymouth, Michigan, to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You mentioned at the start of your broadcast tonight, that was last week, that nearly $500 trillion is spent annually on this nation's ability to wage war. That's right, $500 trillion yearly for our war budget. Who are we? We don't need this to fight guys that are in battle barefoot with captured U.S. weapons or Kalashnikovs, right? So this is just another boondoggle. We could defend ourselves. Like China spends $50 billion a year, so we could spend $100 billion. So we could cut it, 80% easily, turn all this money over to what Lance Armstrong wants it for, cancer research. We could this is what Garrett writes. Would you agree that if the same amount or even half of that amount of money used to fight the war on terrorism was placed into the research and development of alternative fuels, we could create a source of energy that is renewable, cheap, abundant, and dare I say clean? Yeah, absolutely. Except you have the oil dudes running foreign policy led by who? Bush and Cheney, of course. It gives you something to ponder while reading the paper and spending your hard-earned money at the gas pump and not on yourself. That's right, giving it away. One more just came in from KC. Hi, Peter. Carter's energy plan would have rid us of Middle Eastern oil dependency within 30 years. I have to say, I don't remember exactly what it was. Reagan, as in Ronald Reagan's first act of office was to remove the solar panels that Carter had installed on the White House. And see, these right-wing wackos that get in office every once in a while and do tremendous damage to the nation, to the environment, to people's rights, to working conditions, wages, all of that. Possibilities they do great damage to. Partly they're just greed heads, partly they're just wacky. They just hate everything. So, why in the world would Reagan take off solar panels from the White House? Because it represented a culture he didn't like. Even though Carter is from the South, it represented Northern California. Wasn't that where Reagan was from? Well, I guess he was from Southern California, wasn't he? All right, continuing onward at 313-298-WRIF. It's Adam from Waterford. Hi, Adam. It's Peter Werby.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
I just wanted to go back and talk about Bush being impeached and catching him for everything that he's done wrong.
Okay.
I mean, Nixon was caught after Daniel Ellsberg, after he filed the complaint. And he was, and they broke into his office and everything like that.
Right.
And Bush is not going to be caught. They're not going to do anything about it. He's too powerful until he does something to someone personally. And they go in and uncover everything that he's done. And so until we have somebody like that who has enough power to speak out against him, he's just going to keep on doing what he's doing.
Well, Adam, I think that's an excellent point, because essentially the Pentagon papers that were exposed showing that the Vietnam War was based on a series of lives as well. That's when things began to unravel. Well, we have something called the Downing Street Memos that shows that the intention was to go to war and that they were going to fix the intelligence around the policy. In other words, they decided to go to war. The conservatives, the neocons, the neoconservatives had decided to go to war as early as the 90s and were just looking how could they get the power of the political state and hence the military in order to carry out these harebrained schemes. Well, they may have sounded good on paper. We control the great source of oil in the Middle East. We have forward bases and intelligence siting and everything like that, except it's all gone to hell in a handbasket, hasn't it?
I mean, every day our boys are dying just because they needed some excuse to go to war, and they found one and got all of our attention because of 9/11 and went behind our backs basically and did this, and they're not going to change anything until someone steps up and uncovers this. But
well, no, here's my point. It's already uncovered. What we're missing is an aggressive opposition party. So here's Clinton. I mean, dumb old Clinton, who figures, oh, I can get away with this little dalliance. No one's watching me. So then he lies publicly. And so the Republicans, this aggressive opposition party, both about this Whitewater scandal, which turned out to be non-scandal, spent, what was it, $30 million, $50 million of taxpayer money to find out that the Clintons had done nothing. But that's what's missing in the Democratic Party. They kind of think, well, I'll just step back and we'll be real nice and then maybe they'll fall of their own weight. If the Democrats were more like John Conyers of Detroit and Kucinich of Cleveland and so many of these other people, there's about 50 people now demanding an inquiry based on, in the House of Representatives, based on this Downing Street memo, which really nails Bush for impeachable defenses, lying for reasons to go to war. But it's like the Democratic Party chieftains won't have any part of it. So they're not an opposition party. They're just another party, and that's what's missing.
That's absolutely right. We're lacking a candidate. And a person who's strong enough to able and go up against them.
Yeah.
There's no one out there right now at the top who's willing to do this right now.
Well,
they're all just sitting back and taking a side seat waiting for somebody else to do it.
Well, Adam, that leaves us then. You're right. I don't think there is anybody out there willing to do it. And the only thing that can be done, really, that we can be sure of, as the people have done throughout the history of this country, is to make history ourselves. If it wasn't for popular-based movement, who knows, we'd still have slaves. If it wasn't for popular-based movement, women wouldn't vote. If it wasn't for popular-based movement, there wouldn't be any unions. If there wasn't for popular-based movement, we'd probably still have segregation if there wasn't slavery. And we'd probably have endless wars if it wasn't for the anti-war movement. So it's people in motion that can make history and change history. But you just can't conjure it up. I mean, you just can't say, well, that's a good idea. Let's all head out to, like Woodward and 8 Mile Road and bring 500,000 Detroiters there. If that was the case, we could do it easy. But people are working on it. Thank you, Adam. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Maybe a good time for a break.
Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
And they're off. Puppet Project Wagon gets out to an early lead, followed by Driving Miss Lazy coming on strong on the outside. This one's going to be close, folks. It's Puppet Project Wagon, Driving Miss Lazy. Hot, lazy, hot, lazy. Oh, my, the driver of Puppet Project Wagon has pulled a hamstring muscle, and Driving Miss Lazy wins it going away. A top, top blow for Puppet Project Wagon.
Red Bull Dragster Day, where imaginations run wild and legs run even wilder. September 10th, Woodward and Jefferson, Detroit. Gates open 11 a.m., first race 1 p.m. For more information, go to RedBullDragsterDay.com.
So the kids are headed out to college. You're afraid to pay an arm and a leg to get that new mattress or futon? Stop worrying. This weekend, Tri-County Mattress Factory of Westland is having a back-to-school blowout. Tri-County Mattress Factory is easing some of your pain. They give you brand names for less. The mattress or futon you want for the good night's sleep your kid's going to need. The first annual back-to-school school blowout at Tri-County Mattress is happening this weekend, and Tri-County wants to stretch your dollars further than anyone else in town. They're the little guys, under new ownership and with non-commissioned salespeople, working with low overhead, so they can pass the amazing savings on to you. Tri-County will beat all deals from the competition. Bunk beds as low as $99. Simmons Queen sets starting at $299.95, and futons that beat anyone's deals. Come on in. They'll prove it. Call Tri-County for more details at 734-728-8022. The first annual back-to-school blowout now at Tri-County Mattress Factory, where quality costs less. On Ford Road in Westland, 1 mile east of I-275. Your good night's sleep can be found at Tri-County Mattress Factory.
Gas, you can go places. And now the Citgo Prize Patrol is on the way to a location near you. Spot it, and you can instantly win your share of prizes good for gas or anything in the store. During the Citgo Great Gas Giveaway, we're giving away more prizes to more winners than ever before. Just look for the Prize Patrol at any Citgo, or enter by mail, or at www.citgo.com. We know you have places to go this summer. We'll help you get there with the Citgo Great Gas Giveaway. Go for the road ahead. Available only at participating Citgo locations. No purchase necessary. Must be a legal U.S. resident, 18 or older, and a licensed driver. For official rules and details, see www.citgo.com or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Great Gas Giveaway, P.O. Box 4689, Houston, Texas, 77210. Ends 9505. Void in Puerto Rico, Maryland, and were prohibited or restricted by law.
Another WRIF concert.
A night of no bullshit rock.
Neurogenuine Draft Concerts at DTE Energy Music Theater presents Ted Nugent, sponsored locally by Comcast.
Welcome, Ted Nugent.
Kicking ass and taking names.
Live on stage.
Ted Nugent.
This Thursday at DTE Energy Music Theater.
I got you in a stranglehold, baby. You best get away.
Detroit's Rockin' Rampage. The Nuge is loose.
This Thursday at DTE Energy Music Theater. Get tickets at PalaceMet.com, the Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices. All Ticketmaster outlets are charged by phone at 248-645-6666.
Ted Nugent.
Sponsored locally by Comcast. Presented by Miller Genuine Draft Live. Real music, real flavor.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
Phew, I think I've lost him.
Great, lose the bad guys, hit a fence. Better call Esurance. 1-800-ESURANCE.
Go.
Hi, Agent Aaron here. I've gotten into a fender bender eluding my pursuers. Don't worry, I wasn't injured.
Well, Special Agent, look on the bright side. At least you got Esurance.
True, with Esurance, I can report a claim anytime, 24-7, 365 days a year.
And don't forget, at Esurance, there's always someone there to help.
With Esurance's fast, friendly claims representatives, I'll be back on the road in no time.
That's right, Special Agent. Affordable rates, fast, friendly service, round-the-clock claims handling. That's Esurance.
And that's why I always say, if you're on the go, you've got to have Esurance.
Save on 24-7 claim service at Esurance. Get your auto insurance quote at Esurance.com today.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. A good talk show host summarizes what we're talking about. We're always talking about everything. Talking about the big bike ride down at the Lazy W Ranch. Lance Armstrong, a critic of the war in Iraq, saying it's money's misspent, should be spent on cancer research, biking away with Bush. People saying he's spending too much time. He's obsessive about his exercise regimen. Also, the price of fuel, the price of gas. They're just kind of waiting to see, you know, how much they can rip off. We don't say much. You call talk shows like that, but nothing's happening yet. Remember my prediction. It'll get up above $3, and all of a sudden Congress will get indignant. We can't allow this. We're going to knock it down to $2.80, and everybody go, all right, man. All right, usually I give, what do they, I guess they call that the opening monologue, you know, like the late night guys, comics give on television, but also talk show hosts. I usually do it for almost 25 minutes. I only did it for about 15, so bear with me, particularly if you're on hold. They're going, the guys on hold are going, oh, no. Yeah. All right. You may or may not know that the Bush administration has announced plans for what they're calling a freedom walk on September 11th. September 11th, right? We remember that day. That's seared in our minds. It's going to start at the Pentagon, and people are going to walk to the end of the National Mall, and then they're going to have a cultural event. They're going to have a music event. It's going to be a country music show. A country music concert. It's not going to be a spread of country and rock and roll and rap and, you know, that kind of other, what, I can't even think of some of these people. You know those rock stations that women listen to that as soon as us guys here, we say, that's not rock and roll. You know, they could have all that. No, it's simply a country music concert. Well, the New York Times in its editorial today says the event is an ill-considered attempt to link the Iraq war to the terrorist attack of 2001 and misguided in almost every conceivable way. I certainly think so. It also badly misreads the public's mood. The American people are becoming increasingly skeptical about the war, the editorial says. They want answers to hard questions, not pageantry. Now, certainly, organizing memorials for the people we lost on September 11th makes a lot of sense. And even starting at the Pentagon, there was people at the Pentagon who paid the ultimate price. But, you know, this the insistence on combining these two is politically loaded, and it is a political rally. It's a right-wing political rally taking advantage of the kind of emotions that all of us expressed on that terrible dark day on September 11th, 2001. And what it does, since I realize that, again, that Bush is manipulating our feelings and trying to encourage support for a war that almost no one supports any longer, that I begin to back off. I put up a wall between any sort of feelings I have about September 11th because I know they're going to be used and manipulated, used and misused and abused. These people are the most cynical manipulators. I don't have much to say for any politician. All of them are crafting speeches in order to kind of fool us and get in office. But it's one thing if they're power seekers. It's another thing even if they're doing it to lead the charge for the greedy people of this society. But it's a full other thing if they're going to manipulate the tragedy and grief of a nation in order to sustain their political agenda. Now, the walk's going to end here. Let's see. Here's the Times again. Having failed to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the administration has been eager to repackage the war as a response to September 11th. Remember, they even went with that thing, I can't remember. They had something from the Pentagon Department of silly phrases that it was no longer the war on terrorism, struggle against violent extremists. And Dr. Strangelove, you know, the Secretary of War, Rumsfeld, used that a bunch of times. But then Chimpy McFleish suit all of a sudden started hitting again, war on terror, war on terror. So it must be Karl Rove telling him to do that. Anyways, Times says, having failed to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the administration has been eager to repackage the war as a response to September 11th. The Freedom Walk appears to be devised to impress this false connection on the popular imagination. Because there was a while there that everyone thought there was a connection. Saddam Hussein was involved in September 11th. There was absolutely no connection whatsoever, that according to the president's own commission. If you still think if you still think there was a connection between Iraq and September 11th, I don't know what planet you're on. You're just not paying attention, or it is what they call willful ignorance, to be sure. Okay, the walk's going to end with a concert by country musician Clint Black. Now, a lot of you rockers probably never even heard of this guy. Big-time country guy. Black is a gifted entertainer, they say, but his song about the Iraq War, I Rock and Roll, which contains such lyrics as, quote, our troops take out the garbage for the good old USA, sends the wrong message that is particularly out of place at a memorial service. Now, the only thing I would agree with, I mean, the Times doesn't like that statement. Our troops take out the garbage for the good old USA. They take out the garbage for the rich and the privileged and the elite, the wealthy in this country. Because, you know, who fights the wars? It's the old adage. It's a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. That's always the case. Times says in a recent Associated Press poll, just 38% of those surveyed approved of Bush's handling of Iraq. In a Gallup poll this month, 57% the war has made the United States less safe from terrorism. Now, you got Bush regurgitating the same lies that we have to fight them in Iraq before we fight them on the streets of the United States. That's actually what he said. I heard him. We have to fight in Iraq before we have to fight them on the streets of the United States. So if we got out of Iraq tomorrow, or at least stopped military operations, we owe these folks a lot given the damage we've done there, and in fact that all the damage was based on lies, that the idea that if we did that, that suddenly there'd be barefoot guys with Kalashnikovs in ours in Detroit or New York. I mean, this is a preposterous statement. All right, so they're having this concert, right, with country music because he thinks that's the core of his support. Well, he's losing support even there as well. I mean, they could get some rockers. Who could they get? You know, some classic rockers like Bruce Springsteen. Oh, he's against the war, isn't he? Some of the modern rockers, Green Day, System of a Down. No, they're against the war. I mean, maybe they could find. Maybe they should stick with the country people. You know, we're talking about who starts the war. Richard Bradley has a column that appeared. I don't know where it appeared first, but it's in Yahoo News. Are the Bush twins AWOL? Where are Jenna and Barbara Bush? How come they aren't serving in the military? And Bradley says, it's a tough question, but I think it's a fair one. The President of the United States is calling on American young people to volunteer to go to war, but his own daughters, he says, who are certainly of the appropriate age, are better known for their drunken nightclub escapades than any acts of patriotism. And he says, it's pretty simple, really. The military doesn't have enough soldiers. They're not meeting. I mean, think about this. The Army's not meeting its quota. They're doing all sorts of finagling, lower the quotas, fudging on educational requirements. They're going to start giving people 90 grand. I say, put another 10 on it. I'll join. So it's a mercenary. It becomes a mercenary army, essentially, not a volunteer army. The president believes that this is a good and just war. He has two daughters who could enlist in the military but haven't. These things don't add up, says Richard Bradley. So here's a question I think a White House reporter should ask the president. If your own two daughters won't enlist, how can you expect anyone else's children to join the military? If your own two daughters, Barbara and Jenna Bush, won't join, why should anyone? Because they're rich! They're privileged. They're not going to do that. How many people in the Bush administration, including Bush himself, had the opportunity to go to Vietnam, fight a war that they supported politically, but knew it was going to be the poor and minority and working class people that fought the war. That left 60,000 men dead there. None of those guys. Not Cheney. He said he had other priorities. That's one of his famous quotes. In the words of my friend Mike Malloy, one of the great talk show hosts of America, who every night says, have I told you yet how much I hate these people? They are so vile. They are so cynical in the exercise of their power. They could get the Rolling Stones, maybe, instead of Clint Black. Is that his name? Yeah, Clint Black. And why not? Why? I mean, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. They got a new song out called Sweet Neocon. They're opening in Boston tonight. They're going to be here in Detroit pretty soon. They're at Boston's Fenway Park. And they deny that their song, Sweet Neocon, everybody knows, right, that's short for neoconservative. I don't know what's neo, new, right? I don't know what's new. They're just like old-fashioned right-wingers. Old-fashioned fascists, old-fashioned conservatives, but they call them neocons. And one of the lines that they're quoting here, how come you're so wrong, my sweet neocon? Where's the money gone? To the Pentagon? Stone's, Mick Jagger's unapologetic, and the group has little to fear. What a weird thing to say. But one of the lines they're not saying in here, they're saying, this is one of the lines from the Rolling Stones song, new album. And they sing it at the concerts. You say you're a Christian, I call you a hypocrite. You say you're a patriot, I say you're a crock of... I can't say that word anymore. And so I don't think they're going to make it to... I don't think they're going to make it to the concert for Bush's war. But interestingly, I heard this song being played on the radio with the last SH bleeped out on a right-wing conservative talk show tonight. And a guy was playing it over and over again, and he kept saying, where's the Jared all, Mick? You need some Ben Gay? You're making fun of him, of his age. And these guys are shameless, aren't they? But he kept playing it over and over and over again, like to expose how awful they are. But I can't imagine they're getting better publicity. Matthew writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'm a longtime listener. I heard about the anti-war march on September 24th through the 26th. Have you heard of buses going from the Detroit metro area? I've also never been in an event like this. I was considered going with my 16-year-old daughter. Do you think such an event would be okay for her? Yes, it definitely will. There's families. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of people assembling in Washington Saturday the 24th. There's buses coming, leaving from Detroit. I can't remember. If you go to my site, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, you can find out all the information. People are going to be coming from all over the country to go to it. And they're going to have their own concert with a lot of our bands playing. So it's called, what is it called? Operation Ceasefire on Friday night. My old pal Wayne Kramer, the NC5, is going to be there, a man with a heart. Jello Biafra, one of the kind of early punk rockers as well. Lots of other groups as well. All right. Oh, yeah. We already answered this, but just because it's so far away, I'll give a shout out. Drew, listening in Houston, writes in, Kenny Boy is what Bush used to call him. That's right. Ken Lay. All right. That all said, I'm Peter Werbe. The number here, 313-298-WRIF. Let's go to Matthew, listening somewhere in Michigan. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Matt from Howell, Michigan. There's a couple of things that bug me. I'm a retired Marine. I'm 23 years old. I got medically retired out due to training. Something happened to me during training. A lot of the people, civilians that I hear, are talking about, we need to pull out of Iraq. We need to pull out, now. You can't pull out now. You try to pull out now, the people that we are fighting are going to end up taking over Iraq. They're not ready. Their military is not ready. We're going to have a bigger problem. We're going to have terrorists in charge of a country.
Well, wait, we don't know. Wait a minute. They're not. Do we know they're terrorists? I mean, certainly there's people that have come in from other countries, but they're carrying out the level of warfare that they're capable of. If they had tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles and airplanes and stuff like that, they'd use that. I mean, they're resisting an occupation army. Unfortunately, it's us.
Most of the Marines and the military I know would rather fight another army like us, not this in-the-building terrorist warfare that we're fighting over there, where you don't know who's who or who's doing what. We'd rather end up fighting it with tanks and everything else. It's a lot easier and it's a lot safer for us and them.
I don't know if it would be safer. I'm saying that the only time that people are going to go to that level of warfare, if they have the force to utilize confrontational warfare. Right now it's guerrilla warfare. Because now most of the wars that we've been fighting in for the last 50 years, or at least since Korea, have been against weaker forces. So that's the type of warfare that is going to occur. Let's take a different scenario. The United States sends, some of these Marine families that have lost people there said the war should either be fought in a manner that it has to be to win or to get out. You're not going to be able to win with 135,000 people there. The insurgency is getting stronger. United States forces, as you said, can't tell who's who. I mean, there's been these shootings of civilians that have just angered people beyond belief, which just increases the recruits for the insurgents. But let's say we send three, like Vietnam, we send 500,000 troops over there. We could probably defeat them all. And boom, they're gone. And we set up this government. It's a Shiite-dominated government, a religious Shiite-dominated government, who has the same religious philosophy of what country in the area. Not Israel, not Egypt, you got it, Iran. So we could win and still lose.
Well, either way you look at it, in that sense, it's almost a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
Because we're we leave now, terrorists and these insurgents take over. We do what we got to do and get over there, and win this, and now you get a Shiite government.
Sure.
But, everybody wants to pull out, but we can end up with a much, much larger problem of now you got these insurgents controlling the country.
Well, Matthew, it doesn't sound well when someone says, I told you so, but the critics of the war right from the beginning predicted exactly this. They said this was, Rumsfeld and all those people say it was going to be a walkthrough. People are going to be throwing rose petals in our paths and all that. And the critics said, you're going to actually eventually be involved in a civil war. I mean, I know what you mean. It's one of these things. We're damned if we do, damned if we don't. Well, these smart rich guys with the suits that are in Washington, what's their strategy?
It's beginning to be a blur now, trying to figure that out.
Yeah, me too. I can't figure it out any more than you. All right, thanks for calling in from Howell. It's a question we got to confront. Maybe when no policy, maybe it is boogie time. Sean and Warren, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. Hey, Sean, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing? Listen, Jennifer Granholm is my biggest problem tonight.
Jennifer Granholm, if you're listening in Sweden or Singapore or Brisbane, Australia, is the governor of the state of Michigan, in which the city of Detroit is located. How come?
Absolutely. Well, number one, we got all kinds of Canadian trash coming in.
We do. I thought they were trying to stop that.
She's trying to stop it.
No, I didn't know. I'm not saying she is, but I thought there was a lot of effort, and I thought she was in it. I thought Congressman Dingell was trying to stop it. Yeah, we're real close to Canada, folks, as a lot of you probably know. And so Canada imports trash, garbage, waste to the United States, and then we have to bury this in landfills here.
They import it every day. I drive for a living, and I see Canadian trucks coming in. Big trucks, two or three of them at a time, just importing trash every day.
It's wow.
But cigarette prices are kind of a complaint, and the raise of beer prices are also a complaint.
Well, I was going to say, no sympathy with the cigarettes. The beer, I'll join you.
That's cool. All right,
well, I don't know. Maybe we need to get somebody on the phone that knows a little about the progress of this effort to turn away trash. I mean, modern society has a real problem with trash. I mean, what are we going to do with all this stuff? You're right. I don't want somebody else's trash filling up our area. If they're generating it, let them do it. For one thing, if areas are forced to deal with what they're generating, there's a greater impetus for them to deal with it in some constructive and creative way, like recycling God forbid, reduction of what we're putting out in the first place. I mean, the triad was reduce, reuse, recycle. We're supposed to reduce the amount of trash in the first place by not generating it. I just noticed Danon Yogurt was saying they're not going to put plastic caps on top of their yogurt anymore. Something like that. They use 1.8 billion pounds of plastic a year just to put a little cap on it, which is absolutely unnecessary. So they're not going to have that anymore. So something like that. Then you're supposed to reuse what you can reuse, and at the end, recycle everything. But mostly now, it's just into the landfill. All right, Sean, where are we here? Yeah, Sean, we need some more input to find out what is happening to stop the flow of trash into our great state. Thank you. 313-298-WRIF, and we'll be right back.
This is WRIF.com.
Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
The next generation has arrived. Monty Green presents Westbound Records, The Next Generation. The summer's biggest CD release party, this Friday night at the State Theater. The most anticipated CD release and local concert of the year. Featuring Buddha Full of Rhymes, Critical Bill, James Whalen, Seed, and Rib. Doors open 6 p.m., 18 and over welcome. Tickets for this Next Generation CD release party are only $15. Includes admission and a free CD and DVD showcasing the new acts on Westbound Records. Get your tickets now online at statetheater.com or call 313-961-5451, extension 14. The State Theater on Woodward Avenue next to the Fox in downtown Detroit. Westbound Records, The Next Generation. This Friday night in the State Theater. Get more info at westboundnextgen.com.
Another WRIF bump.
From the very first note, you know, this is not just a concert. This is the Rolling Stones. AmeriQuest presents the Rolling Stones. A bigger band.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like Walker's Speakeasy, the West Side's hottest destination for great food, drinks, and daily entertainment. Located on Beach Daily in Dearborn Heights. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Hi, Doug Graham from James Lumber. The James boys have noticed the Big Three offering everyone family employee discounts. We've always treated you like family, so it's natural we'd offer family discounts to you. Now, everybody's a James boy. You can save even more off already low prices. Save up to an extra $537 on pole barns. Save $370 on garages or up to $261 on decks. Hurry in now and grab a flyer to see what else is on sale. We have a store full of items with special pricing. Get your summer project done now.
Come out to the James Lumber location on M15 in Ortonville this Monday, August 22nd from 2 to 4 p.m. Orange County choppers are roaring into Metro Detroit. You won't want to miss this dream machine. A Blue Lynx chopper customized by the Orange County Chopper Team from American Chopper. Monday, August 22nd from 2 to 4 p.m. at the James Lumber location on M15 in Ortonville. Bring your camera. For more information, call 248-627-3600. That's 248-627-3600. James Lumber, M15 in Ortonville.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now, 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Yeehaw! Hey, it's Chief Charlie here from Mark Chevrolet. Hey, you like me. You really, really like me. And if you thought they had good reason to call me Chief Charlie before, look what Mark Chevrolet's got going on this month. It's still summer, and the deals are hot. Not humid, just hot. So while you're listening, I'm over here glistening. Now, get 05 Malibus for just $159 a month with $1,875 due. 05 Trailblazers just $209 a month with $1,875 due. 05 Tahoes are just $249 per month with $3,200 due. And get the new 2006 Cobalt for just $199 a month with just $500 down. Now the fun part. GMS is not for everyone in 06. As all payments include security deposit, wait for lease loyalty, includes all CCR bonus cash and down payment to achieve specified amounts to its signing. SA, B, and CTR only. Chevy, an American Revolution. Remember, the great cars are right here, and Chief Charlie's message is clear. If you like that new car smell, we got a car to sell. Mark Chevrolet on Michigan Avenue in Wayne. Get there.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome back. It's just about midnight in the Motor City, 30 seconds shy. At 1 a.m. Eastern Time, I'll be airing an interview with Dave Zirin. What was his website? Yeah, you can check it out. I think it's edgeofsports.com or .org. I say it on the show. It's pre-recorded. But he's written an incredible book called What's My Name, Fool? That's a great story. That's a Muhammad Ali story. And he's written a book about sports, which is excellent. And then following that, at 1:30, it'll be Ed Mead, who spent 18 years in jail as for these campaign of bombings that he took part in back in the 70s. And he's talking about conditions in prison. So it's going to be an exciting hour of conversation coming up. Right now, we'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. You can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com as well. We're podcasting, so beginning about 4 a.m., you'll be able to pick it up and replay it. Also, I don't know, lots of other things. Go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E. .com, and you can find out all the places you can hear it and all the different circumstances under which you can. Let's see. Dean writes in, can you mention this on the air? There's a good 47-slide presentation about how the Republicans have stolen elections. You're right. Electionfraud2004.org. Electionfraud2004.org. It ought to be taken a look at. Let's see here. All right, let's just go back to our phones. Oh, you got a lot more to say, so do you. Here's Maurice, who's out in Inkster. Maurice, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, man, a couple of weeks ago, you said something that really made me mad. You used Bush and intelligence in the same sense. Don't do that again. And another thing, you said that the Americans are subsidizing the Iraqi gas at 6 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me, what is the process once the oil is pumped out from Iraq? Do they have refineries there that they can refine the gas themselves? Or is it sent them somewhere and sent back to them?
Well, no, there was some of it there. I'm not sure about all that, but they're importing oil. They're importing oil. They don't have enough. They don't have enough pumping capacity right now, given the war and sabotage and what have you, to supply their own needs. So it's coming in from other countries. Who knows? Maybe Saudi Arabia.
Okay, Peter, think about this. You know, back during World War II, where Americans dropped the bomb on Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, they've been kicking our butts ever since, economically and financially.
Okay.
Now, we over there killing these people. I don't care if you're a Saudi Arabia, you're killing Iraqi. I mean, you're killing Arab people. Don't you think the whole Arab nation is going to find some way that they're kicking our butts? Economically right now. That's why I think the price of gas is so, one of the reasons so high.
Now, they're pretty PR. What do you think about that? Do you think it's fair to ask Bush why his two daughters don't join, as that one columnist suggested?
You mean them two hoes? No. You know what?
That's rude.
Like that, man,
that's rude.
That's trailer trash.
Well, there's some rich trailer trash. All right, Maurice. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Let's go to over to the fine city of Ann Arbor and talk to Betty. Betty, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Hey, Betty.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, turn off your radio. Talk to us.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
All right. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I had a couple of things. One thing I wanted to undo a myth, which is actually comical. You know the line that they've been using for, oh, I don't know, at least a year, that, oh, well, we're bringing the war over there,
uh-huh.
so we don't have to fight it here. You know where they got it?
What's that?
They got
where?
It on a Bill Maher show one night. Bill Maher, a couple of years, maybe a year and a half ago, I was watching it. He had Wolfowitz on via satellite. And he was, you know, Bill Maher is sort of, you know, the independent kind of guy. So he
sure.
was trying to reach out. And he goes, well, listen, what's going on? Could it be that, you know, what he's tried, what the plan is, the president and them, they're trying to bring the war over there so that the terrorists, we aren't fighting the war here?
Mm-hmm.
And Wolfowitz goes, oh, if only that were true. And when he said it, in my mind, I went, click. These guys are going to use this, and I'll be damned. They've been using it successfully ever since. After that, their mouths, every one of them, are running the same line. And then the other thing I question.
Wait. Let me ask you a question. What do you think about this idea that maybe Jenna and Barbara Bush ought to be joining up before the president asks anyone else's family to do
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, along with Jebby's daughter, if she can clean her act up and they can dry her out and all the rest of them. And every one of those Congress people, and especially all the ones, I don't care, Democrat or what, they voted for the war, send their kids over there or get these people home.
What was your other point?
All right, the other point was this talk of insurgents, you know, oh, well, you know, the insurgents are there, and now we can't leave Iraq to the insurgents. For one thing, that word, I question, sure, maybe some of them are, you know, terrorists that have come over from Pakistan, Iranians.
No, I think they have,
but that's
a minority of them.
Right. 80% of them are probably Iraqis that want us the hell out of there. Why don't we ask the Iraqis what they want? And I know what they want. They want us gone. Because since we've gotten there, in spite of, okay, Saddam was a terrible guy, they're living a nightmare. And about the oil, one more thing.
Sure.
Under George Daddy Bush, when we were in Iraq and had access to oil, it was, I think, $40 a gallon or a barrel. Under Clinton, it was $15. Under Bush, now that we have control of the second largest oil reserve in the world, it's now $64 or something. These guys are just robbing us and padding their pockets. I don't believe there's a lack of oil. It's just, you know, screw them some more because they're so successful at it and nobody seems, you know, the people that don't have a brain out there don't care.
Thank you, Betty.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling in. 313-298-WRIF. Yeah, what makes an insurgent here? Reuters reported that American and Iraqi troops had killed three civilians in a raid on their house in the Amiria district of western Baghdad, citing witnesses. The deaths of the three identified as brothers Khalil, Khalid, and Jamal Hussein outraged neighbors who said the men were innocent of any crime. Charges of indiscriminate killing by American and Iraqi forces have eroded goodwill towards the coalition forces, according to the Reuters report. Earlier this week, an American helicopter opened fire on about 20 laborers as they slept on a rooftop at dawn. Do you think this might make a few people a little unhappy with our presence there, and it might have the function of recruiting people? But it's what, now who was, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but who had been a Marine and was talking about the type of warfare. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like hopefully not, sure not. Oh, there's some guys sleeping, let's shoot them. It's, you can't tell who's who. That's the nature of the kind of insurgent warfare that's being fought against us, and that's what occurs, and that's why they're so hard to win. All right, let's see. Here is Chuck in Waterford. Chuck, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Okay, I was just thinking after that Marine called about this war on terror,
mm-hmm.
and the whole thing comes down to, at this point, the nature of warfare has changed. It's not our army against their army. In fact, this war on terrorism, I really believe, is going to be fought by police forces and intelligence agencies, not the military.
That makes more sense.
And right, and that's the problem with Iraq. There's no army to be defeated. There's no one or two countries to occupy and have won the war. In fact, it's like the war on drugs. There's no accurate way to measure our progress.
Yeah, you know, in fact, to some extent, there is a way to measure our lack of progress. The United States now is starting to take more and more casualties in Afghanistan. Four Americans were just killed, three severely wounded, and that's starting to amp up. If the United States would have taken its forces and spent it's and utilize a focus on capturing Osama bin Laden, that would have made us more secure. But instead, these guys fabricated this situation in Iraq, took troops out of there, and so now we can't control either region. But think about that phrase: we cannot control either region. These are places 6,000 and 8,000 miles from our home, and we're trying to control those events. I don't think that's going to work.
Right. It's coming down to, it's a battle of ideologies, and we're totally making the wrong moves to win people's hearts and minds over.
Well, I don't even think we have to win people's hearts and minds. I feel pretty badly if people are living under a religious dictatorship. But I don't think we have the capacity to enforce our will on everyone, nor do I think, I mean, for one thing, it's not even legal under international law. I mean, essentially, what the United States is doing in Iraq is termed under international law a crime against peace. There was no there was no international permission to go into Iraq, and as I've said any number of times, had we waited probably a month because the UN inspectors were in there, we would have discovered that there were no weapons of mass destruction and absolutely no pretext for going into Iraq. But that's why Bush invaded when he did.
Well, right. Iraq, let me make a quick point there.
Sure.
I remember after the Gulf War, they said we didn't go in and take out Saddam Hussein because it could have led to civil war and instability in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we've taken out Saddam Hussein, and we've got that civil war. It's going on in Iraq, and Iraq really is kind of an artificial nation. It didn't even exist until after World War One, when, you know, a bunch of Western diplomats carved up what was left of the Ottoman Empire, and that's, you know, the piece of the desert they gave to Prince Faisal.
Yeah, well, in a lot of times when you start talking about history, people go, well, that was then and this was now. But I forgot a couple of people I was talking about, to the Marine who had suffered an accident in training. Some of these problems appear, in fact, and may well be insoluble, is that the word, or unsolvable, whatever, because their roots have such disastrous origins. In other words, can roots have origins? Anyway. So the Western nations colonialize the Middle East, France and Spain and Britain, and as you correctly said, carve up this region, which was Mesopotamia, make it Iraq, purposely setting up these three groups. And that was one of the ways that the British hoped to control nations after after they weren't formally dominating them, by having competing groups within the country would be at each other's throat, kind of similar to Lebanon and what have you. In any event, the insurgents, terrorists, as they were called at the time, began this bloody war against the occupation forces in Iraq after World War One. That happened to be the British. That wonderful man, Winston Churchill, ordered poison gassing of Iraqi tribesmen on horseback from airplanes. And I forgot how many British they lost. I don't know. You remember? It was like 30,000 or something.
Yes, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of that.
Yeah. So.
It was a constant bloodbath. It's kind of amazing. You know, like you pointed out, Iraq, it's Mesopotamia. It's the very cradle of civilization, and all of recorded history has been humanity fighting over the same real estate.
Do you think it's fair? Let me just ask you, that people are putting on Bush now. How come Barbara and Jenna don't join if there's not enough recruits, and he's such a big supporter of the, you know, it's his war?
A mute question. He's not going to send anybody he cares about over there.
All right. You got it. Thank you very much, Chuck. I appreciate your calls. We've been trying to get in all night. 313-298-WRIF. Particularly, we'd asked the question earlier about the importation of trash into our fair state from Canada. So if anyone has the info on that, give us a call at 313-298-WRIF. Our producer and phone screener, Jay Hudson, will grab your call. Also, remember, Jay can be heard on RIF 2. That's you can get that at the WRIF.com website, or if you have an HD radio. Not many of us do. Hey, here's what we can expect as well. This is an article from the Associated Press. War stress blamed in Iraq vet shootings. Remember, people say the people spit on the Vietnam vets. I mean, in terms of spitting on them, the image that was portrayed was that these were a bunch of loose cannon losers. And many Vietnam veterans understandably suffered post-traumatic stress syndrome. And this is what's happening now. In Las Vegas, Matthew Seppi was on his way to get a beer. He tucked an assault rifle inside his black trench coat just in case, shot somebody to death. Lawrence, Massachusetts, Daniel Cotnoir brought out his 12-gauge shotgun, pulled the trigger because there were people making noise outside of his apartment. Also, there was some guy I just saw in New Mexico that brought down a police helicopter, a sharpshooter, with his gun. So the Army Surgeon General has said 30% of U.S. troops surveyed have developed stress-related mental health problems just months after returning home. And who, given what they've seen, and it turned out, I don't know if this is in this article, but, this Marine... someone defending the Marine that shot, though, is his father, who shot into this crowd at a nightclub with a shotgun. This ex-Marine says, the man is a wonderful person. Something might have happened when he came back from Iraq. He's out there picking up body parts. He's a funeral director, and that's what he was doing over there as well. I mean, we talk about it politically, and sometimes we forget about the carnage that these men suffer and that they perpetrate. And for what? And for what? You know, now it's all political. Bush can't afford to lose a war. Like Richard Nixon, one of his brilliant predecessors, says, I will not be the first American president to preside over a losing war. And he was, and he lost lost that as well. Now, when people are saying, what's the end strategy? What's the strategy for getting out of Iraq? There isn't any. I mean, for one thing, they never intended to get out of Iraq. That's why there's not an exit strategy. They're going to build a, you got it, $1 billion, wasn't a slip of the tongue, $1 billion embassy, U.S. embassy in Baghdad, and 10 or 12 different bases. So we'll be able to militarily control oil, intelligence outposts, and what have you. But the Army is planning for the possibility of keeping the current number of soldiers in Iraq for four more years, the Army's top general said. This is General Peter Shoemaker. And he said, Shoemaker said, commanders in Iraq and others who are in the chain of command will decide how many troops will be needed next year and beyond. They're already planning for 07 to 09. Now, Bush said it would be an endless war, didn't he? Well, what? All right, we'll have one of these things. What commie said this? What commie said this? Let's see. We should start figuring out how we get out of there. But with this understanding, we cannot leave a vacuum that further destabilizes the Middle East. I think our involvement there has destabilized the Middle East. And the longer we stay there, I think the further destabilization will occur. So the more we're there, the worse things get, according to this commie. He said also, stay the course is not a policy by any standard. When you analyze 2.5 years in Iraq, we're not winning. Well, here's who said it. Republican Senator from Nebraska, Chuck Hagel. All right. Let's go back to our phones. From Ann Arbor, it's Paul. Paul, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Jennifer Granholm was on NPR a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about the trash problem.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually a protected commodity under the Free Trade Agreement, and it's a federal thing. She cannot touch it even if she wanted to.
Oh my God! I can see how this is too.
Right, it goes back and forth. The state ships garbage, maybe not from Detroit to Essex County, Windsor, but other parts of the country, the flow of garbage goes the other way.
So it's a free trade. What's the A all of a sudden? Free
it's identified
trade
as a commodity was the word.
The
America's
Free Trade Alliance Association. What's the A in there? Free Trade Agreement.
Agreement, yes.
Yeah, of the Americas, the FTAA,
mm-hmm.
Or NAFTA, probably.
Right. Yeah.
It's probably under NAFTA, yeah.
It is under NAFTA.
North American Free Trade Agreement.
Agreement.
And if you violate that stuff, if the state of Michigan was to pass a law barring it, Canada or Ontario, who's over there, could sue in court, in this body they have set up, and could... they could wind up charging the state of Michigan damages.
Right. Everybody seems to be, everybody's upset with this Canadian garbage. Well, I mean, there's a company here that's employing people to take it. I mean, put the pressure on them. The Canadians would keep their own garbage if it was cheaper to keep it there. But
sure.
Obviously, it's cheaper to ship it here. And so they're doing that, and that's kind of where I stand on that is, we're taking it.
Yeah.
That company's making money. I was wondering if you'd ever had Steve Earle on your show, or if you've ever had a discussion with Steve Earle on any of your interviews.
No, Steve Earle's pretty incredible. He's going to be at the Washington Anti-War Concert on September 23rd, great musician. His latest album, The Revolution Starts Now, selling handily. He has a show on Air America that's nationally syndicated. He's hard to pin down. I've tried to get him. I remember my old producer, Jalene Jordan, just tried and tried and tried, and she said, "Should I keep trying?" And I said, "You know what? I don't want to chase anybody." And I'm not being critical of him at all. He has an extraordinarily busy schedule. He broadcasts. He's a working and touring musician. But at some point, people aren't going, "Hey, I can be on your show. Great." I don't spend a lot of time chasing. Steve Earle, I'm 100% supporter of him. Love his music as well.
Great. Okay,
all right.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here is Alan Inkster. Al, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Doing great.
Calling about the Northwest strike.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even mention that. The Northwest mechanics are out, and they'd already fashioned a scab, that is replacement workforce, before they even began. And so they
knew the cost of $20 million.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And they've also been outsourcing a lot of that work.
Right.
That's a little known fact, but, a lot of the regularly scheduled maintenance, what they've been doing is they'll load up the aircraft. Excuse me. Cody. My dog is acting up.
That was a dog?
Yeah, she's got a infection and she scratches it.
Al, you were doing something to that dog.
No, I wasn't. I wish.
I think something unspeakable.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
All right, go ahead.
Give me a reputation.
Go ahead. That threw me off, too. Yeah, they want to save. Now, see, it makes sense. Did he hang up? Yeah. God, maybe I really PO'd him. I'm sorry, Al. I was just joking. His dog was hurting. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Try to make a joke once in a while. Oh, well. All right, where were we? Yeah, the mechanic strike at Northwest. Hold on here. Let me grab this. Yeah, there's a little bit of info on this. And, all right. Northwest keeps flying as mechanic strike, and they want to reduce their labor costs by $1.1 billion. You think, wow, man, they must be paying those guys a lot of money. Well, they're paying them decent middle-class wages, I think as much as $36 an hour, so they can repair planes that stay in the air. Now, Northwest says they've got equally qualified mechanics. Well, they may or may not be qualified, but they're not used to working on these planes. But what they're trying to do is reduce costs, that they're on the edge financially. And what has to happen here is that transportation, which is a critical part of national life, should be subsidized by the U.S. government. We're subsidizing the military. That's where our dollars go, $500 billion a year. I did not misspeak myself. $500 billion a year goes down essentially a rat hole. And I say that is because we don't need that much to defend ourselves. We don't have any big enemies. Our military budget is more than all the rest of the countries in the world combined. So what we need to do is to subsidize Amtrak. That's what happens in Europe. You get on trains anywhere. Some of you folks been there. You go all over, anywhere, everywhere. They've got canal traffic. They've got airplanes over there, aren't they? Like, $20-$30 that you can hop from, Paris to London. And all that. And the airline should be subsidized. And not so that they're making extravagant profits, so we're like not paying, it's not like we're paying, guys can clip coupons and make money. But that's the way transportation, should function. The investors should have a very set expectation of return on investment. And the rest of it can be picked up by those of us who use it collectively. Ooh, terrible word. But we all use it. I mean, as a nation, how about that? You say, well, I don't fly. Well, these are critical modes of transportation. It's tied directly into the economy. And then what's going to happen if they all sink? Well, we're going to have no airlines? Or is it just going to be only business travel? Because where was I going to go? Oh, yeah, I was going to go out to California. Maybe that was around Easter. I was going to go out to California, and like tickets were like $7.50 round trip. I said, I'm not doing that. Or I was trying to get a flight to New York, and I was, you know, a few days before, and they wanted $1,500 round trip Detroit to New York. So this is not a way to go. What we're going to do is most businesses are trying to do is to increase their profits while impoverishing their workers. I mean, not that these scab workers are making poverty wages, but it's driving down. It's a part of this race to the bottom, that's for sure. Something really weird happened, too. A jet blew four tires as it landed at Detroit Metro. Man, that must be scary. Stranding hundreds of passengers on the runway in the hours after the airline mechanic strike. They don't think anything occurred. I mean, it wasn't sabotage. No one is going to do that. But it's all pretty scary. And Northwest can usher us, pardon me, forever that the scab mechanics, the replacement mechanics, are just as trained as the union mechanics. But I don't buy it for a second. I would not book Northwest right now, personally. Now, the other unions, the stewardesses, which they had alternate stewardesses all lined up, the pilots, other people, they did not support it. And they were scared off. They could have all been fired. And they remember the air controllers. Remember that? God, these guys are ruthless, these Republicans. They supported Reagan in 1980. They went on strike, and Reagan fired them all. Guys are cold. Here's Amy out in Brighton. Amy, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Amy, did I do it? I didn't do it. All right, sorry. Let's try it again. Now, Amy, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It was my fault. Go ahead.
Hello.
I
have a few points I wanted to make. One was, somebody mentioned the gas prices earlier. Well, we have a lot of trades going to China right now, so it's raised a lot of our prices with gas. There's a lot of other free trade out there, and we're sending people to work in China for us, and we're buying these things over and over again from Walmart, from wherever.
Yeah.
My other point was these crazy little ribbons everybody has on their cars.
Yeah.
Supporting the war, how much of that money goes towards these people that are actually fighting it?
Well, I think they all say they're giving a percentage, but in fairness...
Are they? I was looking at them at the store the other day, and it didn't say anything about giving any money to it.
Well, maybe they don't then. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's easy to translate. I've sometimes made the mistake of this, and, well, you tell me whether you think it's a mistake or not. I've translated a sticker that says support our troops into supporting the war, and I don't think that's true. In fact, I think it's decreasingly true, is that Americans, and particularly Americans with friends or family or community members that they know, are in Iraq. They have this correct sense that they're highly endangered and want to send sort of a public message to them. Because there are some stickers that say, some ribbons that say, support our troops, bring them home.
You know what? What happened from Desert Storm? We pulled out of there. But what happened? You know, a bunch of our kids came home with chemical problems. Nothing came of it.
Yeah.
If we pull out now, what's going to happen?
I have no idea. I don't know.
You know, I had a great day. I got to live in a free country and do what I wanted to do every day.
Uh-huh.
I had a local paper come to me the other day that said, there's kids over in the war that are laying down on top of bombs in the middle of streets to save our troops because they're doing something for our country. They're actually going against their own government and whatever's going on over there. Because they feel we're doing something right. These are children that are living over there. They're living in the middle of a war.
Hmm.
And they're laying down on bombs to save our guys. That's huge.
Amy, you think there's a lot of that? I never heard of it.
This was in a local Whitmore Lake paper.
Oh,
and they said,
too.
You know what? You don't hear a lot about this at home, but this is what's really going on over there. There's kids over there that haven't been to school because there's so much going on. I've got friends that my daughter goes to school with every day.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother and her grandmother were telling me at a birthday party that they They want freedom over there. They want some choices. Her sister is a doctor over there and has to stay hidden right now.
Well,
we're going to create some freedom from this. And if we pull out, what happens?
Well, I think there's not a hell of a lot of freedom there. And who knows? The condition of women is actually worsening. The constitution of Iraq under Saddam Hussein provided for equal status of women. And they were pretty well integrated into the workforce and what have you. As you said, a lot of women doctors. But under these people that we put in power, you know, remember, we put them in power. They didn't gain power through any particular legitimacy. They want women to be subjected to religious law. So actually the position of women is worsening there. All right, I got to take a break. Thank you very much. Just before we go, though, I want to remind you about an event that's coming up Friday, September 9th through Sunday, September 11th. And that is a play that is called Forgotten, The Murder at the Ford Rouge Plant. It's set in the 1930s. It's a jazz opera written by Steve Jones. It's supported by the Michigan Labor Legacy Project. You know, that statue that's down at the foot of Woodward. And where is this? I can't even see where it is. But anyways, you can go to, it's at the Millennium Center Theater in Southfield. And it's a musical production celebrating religion, labor, and justice. This is very weird. ForgottenShow.net. I mean, it's a weird combination. Well, it's not. There's a lot of, actually, historically, there's been, labor people. And there is actually a famous paper called The Catholic Worker. Have you ever looked that up online? Dorothy Day and these folks. Anyways, but this I'm going away. Forgotten, The Murder at the Ford Rouge Plant. September 9th through the 11th, you can go to ForgottenShow.net. ForgottenShow.net, and we'll be right back.
Bill Bonds with the commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Escombati. Phone number 1-877. Then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877. You see more. The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices. Unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. S. Combati, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye. Virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes. Procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you guys will just want to give him a high five, shake hands with him, walk away, and see a whole new world. See ya.
Online. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
The party never stops. Tuesday nights with The Riff at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Join 101 WRIF this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. The Riff will be there to party hard with a ton of free Riff gear to give away and lots of other surprises, but you can't get them if you don't come out. Plus, Tuesdays through September at Leopard's Lounge, learn how you can win twin Harley Davidsons, plus win a bunch of other cool scratch-off prizes. And don't miss Riff Night Tuesday, September 27th, because someone's going to win an awesome Harley leather jacket. No purchase necessary. See club for official details and contest rules. As always, guys, remember, Leopard's Lounge brings you the hottest girls on the planet, and they never charge a cover, ever. It's the best deal around. So get your buddies together and head out to Riff Night this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge and get ready to party. We'll see you at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil.
Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
Take a ride in a Ford.
Get the Ford Family Plan. Now through September 6th, get the same great pricing Ford employees get on 2005 Ford vehicles. Plus, you'll get up to $6,000 cash back on selected Ford vehicles, too. Now, eligible customers can lease a 2005 F-150 Supercab STX for as low as $154 a month with 1924 cash due at signing net of all rebates. That's $154 a month with a 24-month low-mileage red carpet renewal lease. Take new retail delivery from dealer stock by 9605. Some payments higher, some lower. Not all lessees will qualify for lowest payment. Restrictions apply. The family plan excludes 4GT, Mustang, Escape Hybrid, E450, and F450 trucks and higher. For details, see your suburban Ford dealers. See Varsity Ford Ann Arbor, Palmer Motors, Chelsea. Open Saturday.
There's nothing like the feeling of a Ford.
See Palmer Motors Chelsea, Varsity Ford, Ann Arbor.
Are you a Democrat? Are you single? Do you have $398 in your pocket? Then you owe it to yourself to join us at DemocraticMatch.com. DemocraticMatch.com has all the features of the conventional dating sites, but unlike the others, you'll never have to worry about being contacted by right-wingers. If you've ever felt uncomfortable about joining an online dating service, rest assured that DemocraticMatch.com boasts the most intelligent, compassionate membership of any single site on the internet. DemocraticMatch.com is just $3.98 a month. That's 5 to 10 times less than the other dating sites you've heard about. And unlike those sites, we give half of our profits to environmental groups fighting to save our only planet. If you've had difficulty finding forward-thinking individuals for friendship and dating, DemocraticMatch.com is the answer you've been waiting for. Don't hold a crossfire show in your love life. Join DemocraticMatch.com today. That's DemocraticMatch.com.
DemocraticMatch.com, yeah.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our final segment of WRIF's Night Call. That's an incredible ad, DemocraticMatch.com. I don't know if you hear it if you're online, DemocraticMatch.com. I've got a match, but I'm still going to check it out and just to see what's up there. But they're saying here you don't ever have to worry about dating online and meeting some right-winger. And they give half their profits to environmental groups. I like that. Jeremy's listening in Windsor, Ontario, and he writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We were talking about trash being shipped in from Toronto. He says the big problem affecting both Detroit and Windsor is smog emanating from 250 coal-fired power plants in the Ohio Valley alone. There are 200 more between the Gulf of Mexico and here, which is also destroying our health. It's true. And Bush protects these. The polluters all backed his run for the presidency again. Neither of our cities are profiting from coal-generated pollution. Well, thanks for making our program international. Let's see. Kevin writes in about this insurgency in Iraq. He lives in Northville. He says, I'd like to point out that insurgency indicates an internal group that is resisting the current government entity. That's right. In the scope of Iraq, it would mean Iraqis fighting against U.S. forces. The issue I have with this is that the gross majority of people attacking our troops are not Iraqi. Well, Kevin, that's not true. The vast majority of people involved in the insurgency are Iraqis. And you know what? Like-minded people join struggles. In 1936, there was a civil war that began in Spain. And it was actually a fascist uprising against a democratically elected government. The fascists want to overthrow a democratic government. And there was a big civil war, and even within it, a revolution. It was a pretty complicated affair. But people came from all over the world to defend the republic, the Spanish Republic, against the fascists. And there's a pretty complex situation, but in many ways they were hailed. And volunteers came from all over came from the United States, came from Canada, to fight the fascists. So what's happening here is that people with an ideology that sees the United States not as the bearer of freedom, something I don't think they're way interested in to begin with, but rather that a foreign power, an occupier, us, that wants to dominate their region politically and economically, to be sure, but also culturally. And you remember, when you hear the words of these fundamentalists, Islamic fundamentalists, they're talking about how corrupt the West is. And they point to pornography and drug use and all the same thing the right-wing fundamentalists here do. So they want to create kind of a city of God, a city of Islam that's ruled by these strict laws that about behavior. I mean, obviously, if you listen to me, you know I'm not a big supporter of that, or I hate theocracies. Bill in Ypsilanti writes, I was in a local video store this weekend, rented a video, got it home, opened it, and found a postcard from the Army Reserve, so you can sign up to go to war. Believe me, I'm calling Monday and going to raise hell. Huh. Okay, let's go back to our phone. We're in our final segment. Remember, at 1 a.m. Eastern time, I'll be interviewing Dave Zirin about his book on sports. Pretty fascinating piece there. And since we mentioned Windsor, let's get Jay on the line from our sister city across the river. Hi, Jay, you're on the air. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Good, good. Just a couple points here. Everyone's kind of complaining about the gas that, prices and the way they're going up. I think the main thing is that we're addicted to our V8s. The majority of North Americans own vehicles with V8s. We want that power, and unfortunately, our auto companies haven't really given us anything to subsidize the different sorts of propulsion that we need to make our vehicles go.
But I don't think. I mean, people. I wouldn't you say that maybe only like 25% of the vehicles have V8s anymore?
Well, I'm in Canada, so we kind of know, like, if you look at a lot of your car companies, they say, like, 80% of Canadians buy the smaller cars, but yet when I go from Windsor over to Detroit, I notice that the majority are your minivans, your sport utilities, and your pickup trucks. You don't see a whole heck of a lot of small cars over there.
Yeah, I don't mean to quibble, but I don't think many of them have V8s. I mean, I have a big full-size Ford, and it's, you know, it's got a six. But anyways, we use a lot of fuel. How much is gasoline a liter in Windsor now?
We're sitting at about 98.2.
Oh my God! So that's close to $4 a U.S. a gallon, or no?
A gallon, yeah. See, my friend's dad there, he was talking about the early 60s, where in Canada, when we used to use the gallon, it was a 13% tax that was on your fuel. Now they've broken it down to a liter, and your tax is about 47% on a liter of fuel. So if you figure that out, you're at, like, what, 168% taxes on a lot of the fuel that you're buying.
Wow. Yeah, that's
tough. So, you know. And, I mean, one of these auto companies, you can't tell me that they're not in bed with the petroleum industry. When, I mean, they're talking, for instance, I mean, I'm not going to bring up the Hemi, but I am. I mean, it's a 50-year-old engine, and you're still getting 18 to 20 miles per gallon, even with the cylinder deactivation. I mean, there's got to be a point when we can make a bigger vehicle go and get what we want it to do without having to spend the enormous, I mean, I spend upwards of $70 a week for fuel, and I live in the city.
No.
10 minutes away from my work, my truck doesn't get very good gas mileage. I chose it. I'm not going to complain about it. But, you know, when do we get to the point where, you know, electric, where these cars, I mean, you put a couple solar panels on top of a van and you can create about 1,000 watts of power, charge it into some batteries and go from there. The majority of people, they set a vehicle up for like a 250 to 500 kilometer range. How many people live in small cities that barely ever drive that in a day?
Sure. Sure. Well, we ought to realize just because we're reaching the point of peak oil, because we have to now fight wars in order to maintain, at least that's what they figure, maintain control of oil, that we ought to be on a crash program to find alternative ways to scoot us around our world. Well, Jay, thank you for making our program international. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Pete. Have a good night.
All right, you too. 313-298-WRIF. What just went through my brain? Windsor. Oh, yeah. Jeez, now I'm just guessing. I hope this is correct. If anybody's listening from the Citizen Environment Alliance, please call in. As usual, eighth year in a row, I'll be hosting the Detroit River Boat Cruise, the environmental cruise, on, I believe it's Saturday, September 20th. I'm doing this right off the top of my head. I'll have information on my website and announce it. Now, this is a grand time. Some of Night Call listeners join us. One of those big tour ships that goes up and down the river, and we've got, you get a great meal, and it's a four-hour ride, and people tell you about what's going on, bad spots, and also how the river's improving as well. So it's well worth it. I'll be hosting it. I'd like to see as many of you as possible join us. But it sells out quickly, so... Boy, it's hard. If I can't give you the information, am I saying that right? It's the Citizens Environment Alliance. Citizens Environment Alliance. And if you Google that, you'll come up with it. All right, let's go to Tony's in Sterling Heights. Hey, Tony, it's Peter Werby.
Hi there, Peter.
Hi.
I just have to take issue with, pretty much everything you have to say.
How come?
I'm a ultra conservative myself.
Oh, you? I thought this said Sterling Heights. You're in Grosse Pointe.
No, I'm in Dearborn Heights.
Dearborn Heights.
Yes.
Well, what? That's not a wealthy area. Why you?
No,
not?
It's not. But
well, that's who else would be a conservative other than a really wealthy guy?
I'm not wealthy at all.
Well, it doesn't make a bit of sense. All that conservatism is set up to make the wealthy people wealthier.
I don't believe that for a minute.
Well, who is the biggest proponents of it? The wealthy.
Of the wealthy?
That's who are the biggest proponents of it, and that's who benefits the most. Yeah, and that's who funds all this stuff, all these rich think tanks and all these ultra-millionaires that always fund everything right wing.
No. Actually, the wealthy pay their fair share of taxes just as much as you and I do. I mean, I'm sure you make more than I do, but we pay a percentage of our earnings.
Right.
And if you make $100 million and you're paying 30%, okay, that's $30 million that they're paying.
Well, I don't think, listen, Tony, if you got somebody who's making $100 million, one of these CEOs that should be paying it out to his workers and instead is just hoarding all this money because he's a total psycho greedhead, and I can't imagine why anybody would want that amount of money. If he's paying a third of his taxes, he probably needs a new tax attorney. Those guys wind up paying 5, 8%. Come on. What? The fact is, the lower your income, the more apt you are to pay the full amount of your tax schedule. The more money you make, the least likely you are to pay the full amount of your tax schedule.
Peter, that's a separate issue.
Well, I mean, you said some guy's paying $30 million. I mean, one of these like CEOs of Disney, you think he's actually paying a third of his income in taxes? I don't think so.
No, and I don't support the rich and all that they do, because I do know that they have write-offs and they hide money here and there. That being said, I don't agree with the liberal philosophy at all.
Which is what, as you said?
Which is the government subsidizing your lifespan, pretty much.
My what?
Your lifespan. Taking care of you from cradle to grave.
Well, I mean, if we're going to have taxes, wouldn't it be nice if some of that got generated back into things that actually help people? I mean, you in fact do support that. You support schools, you support roads, you support any number of things that tax dollars provide. I mean, if you look over in Europe, and they have subsidized transportation. If you go to Canada and mothers get a monthly stipend, you go to other countries and they, by law, mandated a month vacation. You can get paternity leave when your people have a baby. What the hell's wrong with that?
Okay, Peter, but by your standards, you want to penalize the rich for being rich.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, listen, there's so few of them, who cares? Besides, penalize them. I mean, say we took, here's Walmart that pays people the crappiest wages they can. They close plants when people, or close stores when they say they're going to unionize. The family is worth one of them just died. The four remaining of them have a total wealth more than Bill Gates. And if we took 95% of their wealth from them, I mean, real commies just went in there and confiscated everything, they'd still be multimillionaires. They'd still be multimillionaires. They have all this wealth they control, and instead, our cities are deteriorating, our schools are deteriorating, our infrastructure is deteriorating. 40 million people don't have health care. Take all the money away from the Waltons and set up a national health program. The hell
and
with them.
Why is that incumbent upon the rich to support all that?
Well, you know, it is just what kind of social consensus you come to. You can have a country that is the wealthiest country in the world, but so much of it is sitting in the hands of the ultra wealthy, and so little goes to people probably like yourself and tens of millions of others who work their butt off every day and get rewarded so poorly that worry about whether they can get health care for their kids, whether they can get shoes for their kids. They've got kids going to school where there's 40 kids in a classroom, on and on and on like that. Whereas you have these people that say, yeah, we're worth, $900 billion.
But, Peter, don't you understand that every American should work for what they get?
but wait a minute. The Waltons did not work for what they got. They inherited it all. They didn't work for a penny of it. Daddy got it all by, you know, ruthless marketing and driving out independent local producers and paying people crappy wages. And I don't know why would a working class guy have such tender concerns for the ultra wealthy?
And I suppose you believe Prescott Bush was in bed with the Nazis.
Somebody just sent me an email. Well, I think that is the case. Let me ask you again. Why would a working class guy have call up of all the issues that affect the world and defend the ultra wealthy?
I don't defend them.
Sounds like it.
No, I don't. I don't like the rich, but I support them in wanting to hold on to what is theirs, what they've earned.
Well, I don't think they've earned it. Wait. I don't think they've earned it. I think that it's a system of exploitation that is way beyond what is fair. I mean, who has earned the money is the average man and woman who's working in a shop, working in an office, working in the streets, wherever. And that if you have a sense of a democratic nation, that there shouldn't be such huge disparities of wealth, because all that wealth translates into political power, and that the little man and woman have absolutely nothing, so that people should be rewarded incredibly. There ought to be a statutory limit on the percentage of profit someone can take out of an enterprise, and beyond a certain level, it's got to keep going back into the employees. I mean, if union mechanics working for Northwest can make $36 an hour, why the hell isn't Walmart paying its people $40 an hour? Why are they screwing them so badly that they're paying them like $8.50 an hour? These are grown men and women who have families, that have dreams, that have lives they want to live, and it's being stunted by this huge economic Goliath. All right, I got to go. You took a big breath. Think about it. Later for the rich. Working class people don't have to defend them. They've got fancy lawyers that they pay for that crap. All right, thank you very much. Here's never understand that. Never understand that process. And maybe it's just serfs, identifying with the lords. Or, you know, ever hear Malcolm X? Malcolm X, one of the great speakers of the 20th century, talking about the house Negroes and the field Negroes. If you've never heard that and never read it, just go Google. Malcolm X put in house Negro, and see what you get back. It's worth looking at. But somehow to get into the psychology of submission, right? And rather than defending one's own interests, that you support the interests of others. It's the 100th anniversary of the Industrial Workers of the World, this labor union that began in 1905. And their constitution to this day says the working class and the employing class have nothing in common. And the working class, that's all of us, mostly all of us. And it doesn't mean, you know, you're going to have class warfare and people shooting in the streets and all that. But it means we have separate interests. They want to take as much from us as possible by paying us as little as they can. They usually have government on their side. That's why we had to form unions. That's why we had to create mass movements to press for things like minimum wages and all of that. But if you want to see more about them, IWW.org. Check them out. Here is Joan McComb. Joe, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, I was calling about the trash in Michigan.
Sure, I want to hear about that.
There's already a treaty that was signed in 86, the agreement concerning the transboundary movement of hazardous waste, that basically says that we're not supposed to take garbage from anybody and vice versa, because it's supposed to help reduce the risk to public health and property and environmental quality. The only reason it's working right now is because of its commerce, and that's the only thing they're getting by on.
Well, that leaves us in kind of a quandary whether or not Michigan can actually forbid it under the terms of NAFTA. I don't think the free trade area of the Americas or whatever it is, I don't think is applicable here. But probably under NAFTA, you know, you can't stop stuff coming in and out, even if it's poisonous.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, It's ridiculous. I guess all of Toronto's trash comes right to us, but if we send some to them, they can reject it, and they have. Huh. They've rejected 38% of it that we send them, but we haven't done anything about it.
Wow. All right, I got to move along a little quickly because we're almost towards the end of this section of the program, so thanks for that. Oh, maybe here's Chris from Grosse Pointe. I'm sorry, I was bad-mouthing Grosse Pointe. Some of my best friends live in Grosse Pointe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. You're on the air, Chris.
Hi, this is Chris. I'm from Flint. I've just got a couple points and one request, Peter.
What's up?
I've been listening to your show for about 10 years, and you're fantastic. I want to say that one. And I'm sure a lot of your other listeners would like to see you break into primetime. Huh. Get this message out to the public, to the general public, and wake this country up.
I wouldn't say it never happened, but my 10 minutes of fame came when I was did a full-time show on the IE America radio network, and I was too radical for my bosses. The network was owned by the United Auto Workers, and I was too radical for most stations. That rave that I just ran out would probably
come. Right, I got you. But and number two, I want to quickly say there's two alternative fuels. There's 13 stations in this state alone.
Oh yeah.
Sell B20. It's 20% derived from vegetable oil, and the other 80% is regular diesel. They mix it; it drives any diesel vehicle will drive off it.
That's right. You do need a diesel, and also that you can retrofit any number of automobiles for that. All right, Chris, actually, I do got to run. Thanks for being our last caller. My apologies to those left on hold. Stay tuned. Have a couple of great interviews. One, Dave Zirin about sports. You can go see his stuff at edgeofsports.com or org. What would it be? Probably .org, right? And also, a man spent 18 years in jail for a bombing campaign. All of that coming next on WRIF.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
On WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Muskie fishermen, get ready to compete for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway. There's still time to enter to win cash and prizes if you can boat the biggest fish on September 17th. Sign up now for the Muskie Championship. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in today. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Hooters, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, professional grade caulks, sealants, and adhesives. Complete battery source, every battery for every need, and 101 WRIF.
Yeehaw! And Chief Charlie here from Mark Chevrolet. And I gotta tell you, you folks are making me look good. Ever since I became the spokesman for Mark Chevrolet, we're moving cars, and I'm getting noticed by the women folk. They still ain't talking to me, but I'm getting noticed. Now it's time for you to notice the great deals this month at Mark Chevrolet. Like this 05 Malibu for just $159 a month with $1,875 due. An 05 Trailblazer just $209 a month with $1,875 due. 05 Towers are just $249 a month with $3,200 down. And get the brand new 2006 Cobalt for just $199 a month with just $500 down. GMS is now for everyone in 06s. All payments include secure deposit, waived for lease loyalty. Includes all CCR, bonus cash, and down payment to achieve specified amounts due at signing, SA and BC tier only. Chevy and American Revolution. Yeah, some women do like fast offers, don't they? Hey, remember, for new and used cars, there ain't no place better. And it really doesn't matter if the weather's drier or wetter. Mark Chevrolet, Michigan Avenue in Wayne. Get there!
So what's going on in the house of the Rock Belt, David?
Whoa, excuse me?
What's happening at Rock Financial?
Oh, the newest, the latest, and great. I got a doozy for you.
Real? A doozy?
I love the word doozy.
Okay, Beaver Cleaver.
Quick and easy. No pay stubs, no W-2s, no tax returns. A lot of folks have asked me about this. It's not a new one. It's an oldie but a goodie. Here's the deal. If you maybe are paid on commission, you're self-employed, you're in between jobs, there are so many factors of why you would want to use the Quick and Easy loan. And the interest rate on our Quick and Easy loan is extremely close to market rates. It's not 2 or 3% higher. We're talking right there.
So you don't slam the door on people just because they aren't conventional.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Help everybody?
She could have done it in 5 seconds. It took me 60.
Well, you can call the Rock Financial Experts, and they'll fill in the rest.
Right.
800-333-ROCK. They're home of the mortgage experts, and you can visit them online at rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial, a Quicken Loans Company, equal housing lender. Call today, 800-333-ROCK. Rock.
It's a doozy, that quick and easy. It's a doozy.
Doozy.
Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-824-6692. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-824-6692. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now. 1-800-824-6692. That's 1-800-824-6692.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. You know, often, if you've heard this broadcast before, I always say television is kind of worthless for finding out any real information, and I like it for what I call mindless activity, and usually that's sports. I can just sit back, not have to think about all the politics that we talk about on this program so often. But, you know, like everything else, politics is embedded in sports as much as anything else. And you say, what? Can't you just lighten up? Can't you leave something alone? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see. My guest is Dave Zirin. His book is What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. And he's a popular sports writer. He's a commentator as well. He's the editor of Prince George's Post, and he writes the weekly column Edge of Sports. You can see that at edgeofsports.com. He is the regular sports commentator for Air America's national radio show, So What Else Is News, and a senior writer at basketball.com, a regular columnist for Sports Fan magazine, lots of other magazines as well has featured his material. It's a pleasure to welcome Dave Zirin. Dave, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, great to be here, Peter.
So what do you say to people when they say, hey, man, it's just a baseball game, it's just a football game, let it be? Why do you always, you guys, you lefties, always have to shove politics into everything? Well, we do, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, well, I say I wish it was just a baseball game. I wish it was just a football game, just a basketball game. And it's not certainly not the left that's trying to project politics on the sports. I mean, it's the right. Everything from, I mean, look at the last Super Bowl. Everything from having George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton toss the first coin to the Blue Angels flying overhead to the commercials attempting to recruit from everything from the Army, the CIA, the FBI. I mean, I was just at a Washington Nationals game here in my neck of the woods, and I showed up to see a baseball game. And found out I was at Military Appreciation Night, which has the unfortunate acronym of MAN, where 20 people were sworn into the Marines at home plate while George W. Bush and Condoleezza looked down from the quote-unquote owner's box as if they're Caesar. I mean, I thought some lions were going to emerge from the dugout in a second. And so it's not the left at all that projects politics on sports. It's frankly the right wing. It's the people who run this country. If anything, I think the left could do a much better job of entering the political fray and actually having it out.
Well, like so many things in this society, sports is really segmented. So there's a sports section which rarely, if ever, unless there's like a hockey lockout or a baseball strike looming, you're not going to get anything of politics. It's just going to be pure sports. And a lot of people do like that, like me. I mean, I sometimes think, I remember someone long ago saying to me, baseball is so weird, or any of the sports. You got millionaires playing games for working people. So,
yeah.
So, at some level, I know you're a sports fanatic, you must just veg into the game.
I absolutely love sports, and I think one of the reasons why I think it's so important to have a political perspective on it is so we can take apart sort of what's disgusting and what's not. I'm in the process of doing this book. I've talked to a lot of sports fans, lefty sports fans, who treat watching sports as if it's sort of like their little secret or something. You know, it's like as if they're watching it in the bathroom late at night with the door locked, hoping nobody comes in or something. You know, and it's what I'm here to say is that it's nothing to be embarrassed about. Sports are a beautiful thing. Well, the problem is the way that they're packaged, and that's what we need to stand up against.
Well, most public left intellectuals, if you will, are middle class, often academics, or and you know, Gaia bless them, but they tend to have a lot less interest in sports than just say the average person who's liberal or left or what have you. So they may ignore you know, sports quite a bit, but the average person, and we know at a minimum half the country is left of center. From the voting patterns,
right.
I suspect probably a lot more, many who don't vote. But there is this interest in sports. But again, like I say, it's normally a diversion, don't you think?
Well, I think that's what it is at its most basic. I mean, it's something where you kick your feet up and watch it. But for us to think that it's purely a diversion, sort of no harm, no foul, put your feet up, I think is a terrible mistake. Because it's like you said before about the sports section, I don't believe that sports is segmented from the rest of society. I think politics are relentlessly hustled through sports. And so it's like we have a choice. Are we going to engage in the politics that swirl around sports? Or are we going to say, it's just sports? Or should we say, we should just... just keep our mouths shut and put up our feet. Meanwhile, you know, the stadiums are getting built on the public dole while schools are being underfunded, you know, and all sorts of political things are relentlessly hustled through sports. I mean, that's how I start the book, by just pointing out that sports right now in the United States is a business that's over a $200 billion a year operation. It's literally bigger than U.S. Steel. So for us to treat it as if it's just sort of harmless diversion, I think, is a big mistake.
Well, Dave Zirin, I was just about to bring us back to your book, and thank you for doing it. The book is What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. It's published by Haymarket Books. You can go to haymarketbooks.org, and I'll have a link to it on my site, peterwerby.com. But remind us what the title refers to. Once you see the book, there's no question on the cover. But remind us of the title.
Sure. The title is What's My Name, Fool? And just to be clear, it's not about Mr. T. No, that would be Pity the Fool.
Right.
Actually, I've been asked that before. No, the title is a reference to Muhammad Ali, whose face, I'm proud to say, adorns the cover. It's a reference to the time in the 1960s when Ali changed his name from Cassius Clay. And I reference it because I think it's literally the high point of the history that I'm trying to talk about in the book, and that's when sports and social movements have intersected, when radical politics have found expression on the playing field. To me, the high point of Ali in the mid-60s, when he had one foot in the black freedom struggle and one foot in the anti-war movement, is to me just incredibly inspiring and titanic. You know, when you had a whole mass of people watching his fights and really feeling like the fortunes of their struggle really were connected to how he did in the ring. And that certainly was the case in the 1965 fight he had against Floyd Patterson. Patterson, who was a former two-time champion, came into the ring, and in the pre-fight hype, he said, "I am fighting Clay, and yes, his name is Clay, as a patriotic duty to return the title to America. It's my crusade." And Ali's response was actually no response, which shocked people because he was, of course, so loquacious. He was known as the Louisville Lip and Gaseous Cassius. And instead, he went right into the ring, and he just pounded Patterson over the course of 9 rounds. And as he hit him, he yelled so the press row could hear. He said, "Come on, America. Come on, white America. Say my name. Is my name Clay? What's my name, fool?" So it's that kind of statement where he's saying, "Recognize me. Know who I am. Hear what I have to say. Or you're going to feel the end of my punch." And, you know, I just wanted that to really be the thing that projected from the front of the book.
Well, very frequently, since sports and to some regards training and the fact that it's combative has this sort of militaristic aspect to it, so it's easy to portray almost all the players as conservative right wing. You begin to see the rise in a lot of them of this fundamentalist Christianity and what have you. Is there a way, I mean, we're talking about, what, five professional sports, if I'm counting right, and is there a way to get a, is there a general personality of sports, or is it all over the board?
Well, that's one of the things that's interesting is, like, I feel like sports coverage is far to the right from where ordinary people are at, and you referenced that before in terms of the actual numbers of people in this country who are left of center, and I completely agree with your overall take on that. And I think that goes for athletes as well, but because the coverage is so slanted, you don't really hear about them. And I try to tell those stories in the book about people like Etan Thomas of the Washington Wizards, who does organizing against the death penalty with Amnesty International, or a Donald Foyle of the Golden State Warriors, who started a grassroots campus organization called Democracy Matters that fights for campaign finance reform, of all things. Not in addition to athletes today who are speaking about the war. I mean, the problem is that unlike the 60s, we don't have the mass social movement to give their words a resonance that would echo through the ages the way that Ali's voice certainly does.
Mm-hmm. And when we think about it, most, as I said earlier, most of these professional sports stars are millionaires, or at least great numbers of them are. And in some ways, it's very similar to Hollywood. You have people in Hollywood certainly acting way out of discordance with their actual income. In other words, people usually as rich as that are Republicans and conservatives,
right,
and what have you. But, I mean, to some extent, I think that's why the Hollywood people are resented, because they don't act like the rich people that they are. They actually, great numbers of them have a political and social and ethical conscience that's missing, I think, in most wealthy people. So,
right. I mean, I definitely agree with you about the parallel between Hollywood and sports, but just a couple differences that I think are reasons why it can sometimes politics reflect in sports in a much more sort of electric way. One is that, I mean, unlike Hollywood, the overwhelming majority of professional athletes come from poor or working class backgrounds. Not all of them, but the overwhelming majority. And so with that usually comes a connection to the old neighborhood and an identification with poor people in a way that's very personal and not disconnected or unrooted from that. The other big difference is just about labor and control of their labor. Like, George Clooney is a good leftist, and I like George Clooney, but if he wanted to go 2 years without making a movie, he could do that. You know, on the other hand, if Allen Iverson wanted to miss one practice, it would be on the front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he'd be called all sorts of names. So that idea of not really being in control of your body, of your labor, of course being very well compensated for that, but it does create a difference between the athlete and the Hollywood star.
By the way, when I earlier said sports was a diversion, I support that. I mean, I support being diverted from our problems of life and the politics of life and what have you. And to some extent, I'm always sorry when I find out a particular actor or actress is a right winger, because I like them less. And the same is true with sports stars. All of a sudden, you'll find some guy is, you know, a far right wing Christian fundamentalist pro Bush guy, and I go, I don't even like to watch him play anymore.
Right.
Are you playing an instrument back there, Dave?
No, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. That's
hold on 1 second.
No, we can't.
Oh, we can't. Okay,
we don't
have to roll through it then.
We roll through it.
Perfect. I must have a coworker in the back. I'll be like Ali. I'll dance around the noise and
that's fine.
And throw out here what I think about that, because I think you make a good point. I mean, I had a friend who used to say to me all the time, "Trust the art, not the artist."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I never quite bought that, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I actually think I like it when the artist has politics that I can feel like reflects itself in the art. So it's like, I honestly feel very thrilled when political voices come through athletes. I love the fact that Steve Nash, for example, who's the NBA MVP, is a lefty politically, and then he comes out and does his thing.
Yeah, I mean, I keep telling myself, like, about Ted Nugent, you know, which his nickname is the Motor City Madman, although for some reason or other, he's moved down to Crawford, Texas, and fortunately, We haven't seen him arise in the Cindy Sheehan drama yet. But I always, whenever I hear him on the air, and, you know, he's such a crazed right winger.
Right.
And I keep saying, good guitar, good guitar. He's singing good guitar,
right,
like that, to try to ignore it. And I wonder how righties deal with the fact that probably 90% of Hollywood and, you know, are liberals and leftists.
Well, I think Laura Ingraham kind of told us that when the right-wing radio host, when she put out a book called Shut Up and Sing.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem, you know, a lot of times people say that to athletes as well, just shut up and play. And I just got to tell you, my experience in talking to athletes, a lot of whom are people of color, African Americans, when they hear shut up and play, to them, I mean, it has a very sort of racist bent to it. To them, it sounds like shut up and dance, pretty much. Like, we don't want to hear what's on your mind. Just entertain us.
Dave Zirin's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His book is What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. It's available from Haymarket Books. You can go to haymarket.org. You can go to my website as well, where it will be linked. Dave's site is edgeofsports.com. Boy, I did one of those things. I gave all that reintroduction, and I forgot the next question that I was going to ask. Oh, yeah, I do remember it. You talked to a lot of sports people, current and previous girls. Great. So tell us about a few of them.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, this was by far the most rewarding part of doing the book, was to be able to speak to some of these people and hear it from them. I mean, I'll tell you some of the ones that really are going to stay with me for the rest of my life, and hopefully people who read the book can get something out of that. One was talking to 95-year-old Lester Rodney, who was actually the sports editor of the Daily Worker in the 1930s.
In the old commie paper?
Yeah, and when I say that to people, their first reaction is usually, the Daily Worker had a sports editor?
Oh, no, I actually know that. They were real big on that. Yeah,
yeah, and what Lester Rodney did was he used the sports page not as a place to talk down to people about how dumb they are to like sports or whatever, but actually as a place to organize for the integration of baseball. And so it's just the stories about petitioning in front of Wrigley Field or Yankee Stadium to fight for integration, the stories of him being ringside at the Joe Louis Max Schmeling bout in 38. I mean, and he's sharp as a whip, too, so it was just an incredible experience to talk to him. Another person who it just meant the world to me to talk to is John Carlos, who is the bronze medalist in the famous Black Power salute in the 68 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear the story really from his mouth about the degree to which he was shunned. And also about the...
Wait, remind us about that story, though. They gave
the Black
Power salute when they were up on the stage. Well, there was three of them, African-American...
Two. Tommy Smith and John Carlos,
okay.
Gold and bronze medalists. The silver medalist is a white guy named Peter Norman from Australia.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I learned from doing the book is that if you look at the picture, Peter Norman's actually wearing a solidarity button on his left breast. He stood with what they were doing. And I also learned that when they were on the dais, they were wearing beads to protest lynching, and they weren't wearing shoes to protest poverty.
Wow.
And John Carlos actually, in a huge breach of etiquette, had his Olympic jacket zipped down to his navel, and he told me he did that as a tribute to blue-collar workers in the United States.
A lot of symbolism there. I guess, but what happened? Were they weren't stripped of their medals, were they? Were they?
Oh, they were stripped of their medals. They were kicked out of Olympic Village immediately.
Really? For doing all that?
Yeah, and they were also subject to just an insane amount of harassment when they got back. John Carlos, he would have bullets sent to his house, and he couldn't get a job. At one point in the late 70s, living in Harlem, he was reduced to chopping up his own furniture for firewood. And it was a terrible situation that he found himself in.
Did they ever recover? I mean, a lot of so many sports stars, if you keep your mouth shut and do the right thing, you become millionaires.
Yeah, no, they recovered emotionally. I mean, they're both coaches, they both work with kids. But John Carlos said to me, I think very poignantly, he said that he feels not like a hero, but like a cancer survivor. And when people look at him, it's almost like they keep arm's length as if he somehow had a disease or something because he was so shunned. I mean, the people I know who read the book read the interview I did with him, and they see him as a hero, as I see him as a hero. But it's like his own personal experience was so embittering that's really not how he walks it.
Dave Zirin, your book, What's My Name, Fool? It, as you say, in your first chapter, it all starts with Lester Rodney, who was the Daily Worker sports figure. But then you have a whole chapter about Jackie Robinson, which has been told in so many times and in so many ways as a triumph of democracy and a triumph of right, triumphing over narrow-mindedness. Do you read it like that?
Wow, it's amazing how boring people can make history. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Like, the real history is so much more interesting to me. I guess I'm from kind of the Howard Zinn school of looking at this, but, and that's not just about my political bent. It's about, I think history is so much more interesting when you look at real conflicted people having real difficult arguments and not the kind of hagiographies that passes for history in this country. But, Jackie Robinson is everything to me that's interesting about sports and politics in this country. I mean, I think the best way to tell you about the chapter is, you know, I went into writing it, frankly, a victim of the hagiography, thinking of Robinson as sort of this suffering black saint who went in and suffered the slings and arrows of racism.
Let me just tell people that hagiography is the life of saints for the non-Catholics.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm a nice Jewish boy who went to Catholic school, so I've got both going for me.
Okay, great.
You ever heard the difference between Catholics and Jews? Well, Jews are born guilty and Catholics go to school to learn it.
There you go.
Old joke. Okay. All right, moving on.
Oh, yeah, Jackie Robinson. Not a victim.
Not a victim, but like a very, very political human being. I mean, somebody who actually wrote a political sports column for the New York Post before it was the right-wing rag it is today. He was someone who barnstormed for the civil rights movement in the 1950s. He was the most requested speaker by NAACP groups around the country.
Hmm.
The number two requested speaker was someone you might have heard of named Martin Luther King.
There you go.
And he would always end his, and he barnstormed. It's not like he spoke three times. He went wherever they wanted him to go.
This was after, he was already a Brooklyn Dodger.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the most interesting thing about Jackie Robinson is just, to me, is also that period between 1947 and 1954, before the civil rights movement got started, when he was really on his own out there without the mass support of a movement. That's why Martin Luther King, in referring to Robinson, called him a freedom rider before freedom rides, a sit-inner before the sit-ins, the man who really walked the lonesome road. And one sports writer at the time called him perhaps the, quote, loneliest person on the face of the earth. Yet despite his loneliness, he kept his fierce pride, and he also kept his political bent, which was one of just utter recalcitrance in the face of bigotry.
Hmm. Yeah, the story is much, much more to it. I was also told, have you ever heard this? The story was, who was the general manager? Branch Rickey.
He
was going to take this big step almost like for humanity, like landing on the moon. But he was at a Chicago Cubs, Brooklyn Dodgers dog day of summer, doubleheader, and there was about 4,000 people in the audience. And across town, there was a National Negro League game, and there was like 20,000. And
mm-hmm.
and it was really, in many ways, a business decision.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, coming out of Brooklyn especially. And it was also a business decision that was not looked unkindly upon by other major league owners, even though a lot of them were as racist as the day is long, because they had the benefit of Robinson going to places like Wrigley Field or Fenway Park, even for exhibition games, Boston being an American League team. But when Robinson would go there, they would all of a sudden, the gates would be filled with African-American fans, and it coined a phrase where they called Robinson fans, where you would have like thousands of African-Americans in Chicago not rooting for the Cubs, but rooting for the Dodgers, because they wanted to see Jackie succeed. And, you know, it's an incredible story, and Rickey sometimes is portrayed, Branch Rickey, the Dodgers owner slash general manager, as kind of like the saint of the story, the person who brought Robinson in under his sort of paternal grace. And the real story, is, as you reference, is actually more complicated than that. It was driven by economics, it was driven by the post-World War II climate, and it was also driven by Rickey's desire to see it done, quote-unquote, the right way, which also had sort of all these racial implications. Like, he wanted Robinson because Jackie was college educated, he was a World War II veteran, and that meant people who probably would have been more appropriate people to break the color line, people like Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, Buck O'Neill, you know, the real legends of the Negro Leagues, were kind of left behind, which caused a lot of resentment between them and Jackie Robinson.
You know, I mean, as you know, Detroit or Tiger Stadium was abandoned by the Detroit Tigers in 1999, a place where, you know, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and Hank Greenberg and all these people played, where my grandfather took my father and my father took me, and myself and others swore we would never go to the new stadium. And I'm the only one that has stayed true to the pledge. And it's now called Comerica Park, right?
Yes.
And I've heard, I don't know this is for sure, I wouldn't put this in a column, that in the seventh inning stretch that they sing God Bless Comerica.
Oh, my goodness.
The local bank. No, it's just a joke.
That's a great joke.
You know, we're almost out of time. In fact, we could probably do an hour or two of this, Dave Zirin.
Oh, no question. We haven't even gotten to the stadium issue. I've got like half the book is about modern things today, like the stadium swindles that are sweeping the nation, to, you know, modern athletes who are standing up to the war, to Pat Tillman. I mean, it's a real swirling dervish of politics. So, I mean, that's people who say sports aren't political. Check out the book and see what you think.
Well, I was going to kind of end, as I often do, on what can we do, or in this case, what should we do? Should fans be active? In other words, we always suggest on the left that people become activists in the peace and social justice movement. Is there room in sports for the fans, such as you, such as me, other than talking about it as we're doing, to do things?
Oh, absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
What?
I think we have the power to actually stand up as fans and demand that public subsidies not go towards stadiums. It's overwhelmingly unpopular. It's something that's usually put in cities by fiat. And that, to me, is the cutting edge of, I think, what fans can do, to actually say, hey, I love baseball, but I'm not going to give a billionaire a $350 million present.
All right, Dave, we have 60 seconds, so give me some yes and no's. Or your favorite sport?
Basketball.
And your favorite team?
The New York Knicks.
Okay. Is hockey going to recover from last season's lockout?
Barely.
Ooh, that sends us all a chill here in the Motor City. But the book is fabulous. If you want more of Dave Zirin, his book is What's My Name, Fool? That's Muhammad Ali's famous quote. The subtitle is Sports and Resistance in the United States, and you can go to haymarketbooks.org. And also, while you're there, find out what Haymarket is. And Dave's, a lot of stuff here. Edgeofsports.com is Dave's personal site. I'll have it on mine as well. Dave Zirin, thanks for being on the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, it was just an absolute pleasure to do the show with you.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Take a ride in a Ford.
Get the Ford Family Plan. Now through September 6th, get the same great pricing Ford employees get on 2005 Ford vehicles. Plus, you'll get up to $6,000 cash back on selected Ford vehicles, too. Now, eligible customers can lease a 2005 F-150 Supercab STX for as low as $154 a month with $1,924 cash due at signing net of all rebates. That's $154 a month with a 24-month low-mileage red carpet renewal lease. Take new retail delivery from dealer stock by 9605. Some payments higher, some lower. Not all lessees will qualify for lowest payment. Restrictions apply. The family plan excludes Ford GT, Mustang, Escape Hybrid, E450, and F450 trucks and higher. For details, see your suburban Ford dealers. See friendly Ford Monroe's at Ford Holly. Open Saturday.
There's nothing like the feeling of a Ford. Take a ride in a Ford. Give Suburban Ford a ride. Take a ride in a Ford.
See Brighton Ford Brighton, Gene Butman Ford, Ypsilanti.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win, even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case. Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure
to be with you.
On 101 WRIF.
Boy, crime, prison. Incarceration, crime doesn't pay. All of that we've heard throughout our lives, a lot of little sayings about crime, and our individual concern is expressed in those, because no one likes to live in a society, or let alone in a community, where there's lots of crime. Well, there's lots of crime in the United States, and there's lots of people in prison. And some people think there's not enough people in prison, that there are a lot of people that belong there that aren't. And, of course, we're beginning to learn that there's a lot of people that are there that shouldn't be. But we will talk about this and more with our guest. Our guest is Ed Mead. He is in San Francisco. He's the president of California Prison Focus. And he was brought to my attention by a demonstration that occurred in August on August 13th in Washington, D.C., and it was organized by a number of groups seeking to reform the U.S. prison system. It's the Alabama-based group Families and Friends of People Incarcerated, and they're leading protests and lots of other events, and their concern is that there is 2 million people currently behind bars in the United States, and that is a rate 3 to 10 times higher than other democratic societies. And U.S., you always say, U.S. number one? Well, here's another number one for us. We hold 25% of the world's prison population. Let's try to get to the bottom of this, get some ideas about prison reform, and do we need more people in prison or less or different people. Joining me from San Francisco, Ed Mead. Ed, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're not just a reformer. You actually spent time on the other side, didn't you?
I certainly did, 18 years.
Now, tell us a little about that, because it's a crime or crimes beyond just the ordinary.
Well, 30 years ago, back in the mid-70s, a group of us thought things that were so bad in the United States that we were willing to risk death or imprisonment in order to change them. We formed a group called the George Jackson Brigade and did symbolic acts of armed violence against the state. We did that for about 2 years before everyone was captured. There were a lot of other groups doing the same thing up and down the West Coast and East Coast, Chicago, and a lot of other major cities. At that time, we thought that the forces of progress were on the offensive, and that the U.S. had just been defeated in Vietnam, and we could not see that Ronald Reagan was coming and that the Soviet Union was going to collapse, and, you know, we were just out of touch with political realities. In any event, I wound up going to prison as a result of that.
What years were you there?
I went in January of 76 and came out in early 93.
So you've been out now for 12 years or so?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Now, tell us a little, the George Jackson, I mean, people forget these things. They might think that George Jackson was one of the Jackson Five or something like that.
Yeah. George Jackson was a... an imprisoned revolutionary, black revolutionary, and wrote a couple of good books. One of them was Soledad Brother. And his position was, and he was killed by guards at San Quentin in 1971. His position was that any serious effort at organizing revolution, organizing serious change, has to carry with it the potential for revolutionary violence. And we named our organization the George Jackson Brigade for one reason, because we believe that was true.
What were you accused of, or and what are you willing to admit that you did? What were the charges? What had you like?
Well, let me give you a couple of examples.
Okay,
of,
sure.
of things that we did. At one point, in December of 1974, prisoners were trying to implement democratic changes at the Washington State Penitentiary at Walla Walla, and they took it as far as they felt they could take it, and wound up taking over sections of the prisons in order to push their positions forward. The rebellion was crushed, and the prisoners, the leadership, and participants were thrown in the hole, where they were being brutalized. And they sent word out to the outside, telling them, telling us on the outside what was happening. We tried to get a mass protest together, but there just wasn't that much interest. And so we formed, a group of us formed the George Jackson Brigade, and its first act was to break into the headquarters of the Department of Corrections and to place a 6-inch pipe bomb beneath the director's desk. This is in the middle of the night, of course, at 1 o'clock in the morning, when nobody was there. The bomb went off, did $240,000 worth of damage to the building, and we issued a communique saying that they would hear from us again if they did not stop brutalizing the prisoners in the segregation unit at Walla Walla.
Mm-hmm. There was no human casualties. Was there any human casualties in any of the?
No, none.
Okay.
None. Never. We attacked property, not people.
Yeah. Are you sorry that you did this in retrospect?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Not because our motives were wrong. If you're going to err, it's my feeling that you should err on the side of revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But people died and were imprisoned and made huge sacrifices, and we don't mind making those sacrifices if it results in progress, if it results in things being better in a better world. But I went into prison before I went in. I hitchhiked from Seattle to San Francisco to Buffalo, New York, and attended the worked with the Attica Brothers Legal Defense Committee there for a while. The point being is that in those days, you know, you could hitchhike, you could get out. We didn't have the fear that we have today. I went to prison. Things were so bad. I went to prison to change them. I come out nearly 20 years later, and they are so bad. I mean, people sleeping in the streets and so afraid, so atomized.
I mean, conditions on the outside.
Yeah, and the conditions on the outside, yeah. It just amazed me. It was like Rip Van Winkle. You can't talk to children on the streets anymore. It's just the level of fear that people experience today. And I think that it's largely media driven. I mean, you can't turn on the television without some kind of a gruesome crime story being shoved down your throat.
Well, let me reintroduce you. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. Ed Mead is my guest. Ed served 18 years in the California prison system. He's currently president of the California Prison Focus. He was released from prison in 1993 and has been an active reformer ever since. You answered the question partly. I guess what I'm looking for is 18 years in a horrible institution is a pretty high price to pay for acts. And if you had it to do all over again, would you have done it? I mean, of course, it's hard to say because now you may say, well, gee, nothing much changed. And you said that it looked like things were changing.
If I had to do it all over again, I would not have done it.
How many people in your group were there, and how many were in prison? And you mentioned
six of us were captured.
Yeah.
So.
And how many bombings did your group carry out?
Probably about 20.
Wow. And you mentioned one. Were there others of note?
Yeah. Let me give you another example.
Sure.
I don't know. Your listeners probably don't remember Pine Ridge, the Rosebud, when the U.S. Marshals and FBI invaded those reservations in response to a shootout. It was a shootout that resulted in Leonard Peltier's conviction and incarceration.
This is in South Dakota or North? Yeah, right.
Dakotas.
Okay. Yeah,
and so. What we did is we planted bombs in accordance with a march of protest of Seattle people that were marching from Seattle to Portland to protest the invasion of these reservations. While that was happening, we bombed the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Everett, Washington, and the FBI office in Tacoma, Washington, in an effort to draw heat off of the comrades at Pine Ridge and Rosebud, and on to ourselves, and also to point out the terrorism that has taken place on those reservations by those armed by that invasion.
Now, how were you? Go ahead.
So that was the kind of actions. But there's one action I'm especially proud of. If you'd like me to,
sure, please
go into that. Okay, the. This was after I was in prison and the brigade was continuing on. And while I was in prison, when I went into that prison, it was very dirty. It was filthy. I'd never been in a state prison before. It was just brutal. When I got off the bus, the guys were doing catcalls and stuff at the new fish coming in. Because of my brigade connections, they put me directly in a hole, and I was put in a cell that had that was filthy. The aluminum toilet had soaked up urine over the years, and it was rank. The prisoner who was in there before me had smeared fecal matter on the walls and wiped snot on the walls. It was just I couldn't get cleaning materials. It was a very bad situation there. And over a period of time, writing articles and publishing a little underground newsletter there in the segregation unit, they had four tiers, A, B, C, and D, and there's 24 cells on each tier. We developed a struggle and from within there. And one of the things that we did, one part of that struggle, the walls between the cells were made of steel, and we had a steel table. And if you banged that table with the balls of your fists, then it would make a reverberation sound.
Mm-hmm.
If you had 24 people on a tier doing it, it was very loud. And if you had four tiers of people doing this, it was very, very loud. And it was, every time the mainline population would go to chow, we would be drumming. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Whom, bom, 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 whom, bom, bom, bom. After a few days of this, the mainline population went down on strike.
Hmm.
They had 14 demands. The first demand was to rectify conditions in the segregation unit.
So that's
the strike was a 47-day strike, the longest in state history until this day even. And it was a major story throughout the state of Washington. It was on television, on the radio, in the newspapers. And for 44 days this went on, and not once had the bourgeois media indicated or even hinted that the prisoners might have a side to this story. They're all interviewed guards, interviewed correctional officials, interviewed everybody, politicians, but never interviewed any prisoners.
Well, let me, as I sometimes do, and I don't know if it's always fair, but I try to anticipate what the listeners might be thinking. And they might be thinking, bad conditions? Too bad for Ed Meade. He broke the law. You know, that old thing, if you can't do the time,
we'll
after
address,
the crime.
We'll address that in a minute.
Okay.
Let me just finish the story real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had. Go ahead.
I'll wrap it up real fast.
No, take your time.
Okay. And so on about day 44, the George Jackson Brigade bombs two Rainier banks in Seattle and points out the interlocking directorship between Seattle's major newspaper, the Seattle Times, and the Rainier banks, and says this strike has been going on for all this time, and not once have you hinted that there's another side to this story, and we're going to keep bombing your banks until such time as you show some pretense of even-handedness in your coverage of this major story. Within 3 days, Harold Bradley, the director of corrections, was fired. Hmm. This is after prisoners were interviewed. The press, of course, saying, oh, gee whiz, they caught us. And the warden was terminated. The associate warden was transferred to another place. And we, the Walla Walla brothers, were released from the segregation unit. This was an example of the mass struggle and the armed struggle working hand in hand to accomplish political goals.
Okay. Now, let's go to how people perceive prison conditions. And most of you hear continually on talk shows, they're coddled in prison. All they do is lift weights and watch television and play handball.
Let's some of those people go in there and enjoy that good life. We'll trade places with anybody, anytime. All you just sign right up.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're not going to get good results from doing bad things to people. You put someone in a small cage, like a dog. In fact, a cage that the Humane Society would get on your case if you put them in there in those kind of conditions, and brutalize them. It's like you're poking sticks in them day in and day out, day in and day out. Give them no rights. Then that person, like 98% of the people are, is ultimately released. He's full of rage, anger. He's alienated. He's going to take it out on his family. He's going to take it out on his neighbors. He's going to take it out on the community. I don't want to sound like a crazy, but you ever heard of the Golden Rule?
Hmm.
You send these people. Every human being has a right to life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. Now these people, as a result of their criminal conviction, have lost their right to liberty, but they should still have their right to the pursuit of happiness. And there's no reason to argue that. I mean, these people. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery for everybody except those convicted of a crime.
Right.
Here you have a people held in a condition of slavery and disenfranchised, a modern Jim Crow. If even ex-felons had been permitted to vote in the Florida elections in 2000, George Bush wouldn't be president. 100,000-plus Iraqis would still be alive.
Now, they would have counted all the votes in Florida. He wouldn't be president either. But rather than enumerating all of this, Ed Meade, let me get more to the core of this, that people, as you indicate, that they've broken the social contract by criminal acts, and most people, lots of people, these vocal people, say that, let's make it harsh. Let's make it punitive. Let's make it a penitentiary where they do penance, and so we wind up with 2 million people in prison and the largest in the world. Go ahead.
Okay, 30 years ago you had 200,000 people in prison. Today you have 2.3 million. Are any of those people going to argue that they feel safer today?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. In fact, the fear, as you said earlier, seems to be growing greater.
Yes.
Yeah. So this isn't working, but no one has. The big question is why do we have so many people breaking laws? And there's a couple of very obvious reasons, right?
Well, also people are going to prison for things that they didn't go to prison before, like the federal marijuana laws, the crack cocaine laws. These are and they're going to prison for longer and longer periods of time, And we have legislation such as three strikes laws. In California, we have a guy doing 25 to life because he shoplifted a video. Another one because he stole some cookies. We have, you know, people doing time, nonviolent people doing incredible amounts of time for
no
reason.
Well, the drug war, which should be abolished immediately in my estimation, is part of it. And then the other part, and the reason that I would say, you give me your opinion, that the United States, of all the industrial countries, has the highest level of poverty. And you don't have to be a criminologist to know that poverty breeds crime. The more poverty you have, the more crime that you have. In many ways, it's that simple.
Well, and there's different kinds of crime also. There's the crime of there's a crime against peace represented by the aggression against Iraq. There's the crime of Halliburton and their cronies that don't get punished. And so, but here's what I would say to those people that are against all that. And I would point them to the case of Jose Padilla. Today, he's done 3 years and 100 days, and he has no indictment or charges.
That's the so-called Chicago...
Dirty bomber.
Dirty bomber from Chicago, never been charged. It's an amazing case. Yeah, whatever happened to a right of a speedy trial?
Whatever happened to habeas corpus?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the Magna Carta?
Yeah.
I mean, this rendition that they're doing to people, sending them over to the foreign countries and torturing them at Guantanamo. I mean, how can you call yourself a Christian, a God-fearing person, and sanction these kinds of things? How can you call yourself a patriot and sanction American citizens being held without trial, without attorneys, without charges, without bail? And without access to habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can you? Because one person wants to lock him up as an enemy combatant on soil, on American soil, where there is no combatant going on.
Well, Ed Mead, we just have a few minutes left, so let's return to the United States, although I agree with you that the issues that you raise are relevant. One of them, I remember when the Abu Ghraib scandal first occurred, and it's ongoing, but I think it could have been Bush who said, this is so un-American. And then I Googled something like American prison abuse, and I got like thousands and thousands of hits on it.
Torture in prison is as American as apple pie.
Yeah, and so we have crowded prisons, we have dangerous prisons. When you were in prison for 18 years, was it dangerous?
It was. Yeah. I mean, people being killed and beaten and yes, it's very dangerous.
Intra inmate or from the guards or both?
Both. For example, while I was at Walla Walla, a guard was killed, and the beatings that the custody staff inflicted on prisoners was just one prisoner did this, but the entire population was just totally brutalized, and so that didn't happen. So that happens. But then also with prisoner-on-prisoner violence, I mean, you know, the rape and killings and stabbings, people are killed over, you know, something like a $15 drug deal.
Inside the prison.
Inside the prison, yeah.
Now, you've been out for 12 years. Any reason to think it's gotten better or worse? I mean,
it's definitely gotten worse. I mean, I correspond with a lot of prisoners, and it is, you know, especially in places like Texas, it's just terribly worse.
And
you know what? These people aren't. I work today as a network administrator. That's what I do, and I do my prison support work in the part time. And I learned to do this on the inside in a computer that I made them have in my cell, that I fought for 3 years to get in my cell. And they subsequently ended that program. But 52 of us had computers at one point, and I informally tracked those while I was still in Washington State, 20 of those. And not a one of them returned. Some had their own little computer businesses, not rich or anything, but, you know, own their own house and a truck. And some of them are working for other people in the computer industry like I am. And with the zero recidivism rate for those I tracked. And yet they shut that program down because the appearance to the public was that they were coddling prisoners. So what they're doing now is they're releasing people with no skills whatsoever, with no money in their pockets, and all sorts of discrimination they're being faced once they get out in terms of public assistance, housing, and everything. It's just they're doing everything wrong. The only thing that they know how to do is to apply more and more repression.
Well, Ed, we only have about a minute left, and this is a big question for such a short amount of time. If we want to start reforming American prisons, not to just to make the conditions better in there, but also to create people that can rejoin our communities again, any quick fixes?
Yeah, well, there's no quick fixes, no. Other than to say rehabilitation rather than repression. But actually, as long as you have a society, there must be a radical transformation of existing class relations for there to be fundamental change. That's revolution. And there's not going to be any real change. It's just going to get worse and worse, regardless of how many people you imprison. You can do like they did back in 17th century England and hang pickpockets. And again, pickpockets will be plying their trade on the crowd watching the hanging. I mean, it's just, you're not... the problems go deep, right into the very nature of our social structure and political structure.
Well, thank you very much. Ed Mead is president of California Prison Focus, and that website is prisons, in the plural, prisons.org. I'll have it on my website, peterwerby.com. Ed Mead, thanks for joining me.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2005 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 29th through August 31st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 29th through August 31st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin September 1st.
This Thursday at DTE Energy Music Theater. Get tickets at PalaceNet.com, the Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices, all Ticketmaster outlets, or charge by phone at 248-645-6666.
Ted Nugent,
sponsored locally by Comcast, presented by Miller Genuine Draft Live. Real music, real flavor.
The next generation has arrived. Team Monty Green presents Westbound Records, The Next Generation. The summer's biggest CD release party, this Friday night at the State Theater. The most anticipated CD release and local concert of the year. Featuring Buddha Full of Rhymes, Critical Bill, James Whalen, Seed, and Rib. Doors open 6 p.m., 18 and over welcome. Tickets for this Next Generation CD release party are only $15. Includes admission and a free CD and DVD showcasing the new acts on Westbound Records. Get your tickets now online at statetheater.com or call 313-961-5451, extension 14. The State Theater on Woodward Avenue next to the Fox in downtown Detroit. Westbound Records, The Next Generation. This Friday night at the State Theater. Get more info at westboundnextgen.com.
Musky fishermen, get ready to compete for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway. There's still time to enter to win cash and prizes if you can boat the biggest fish on September 17th. Sign up now for the Musky Championship. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in today. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591.
1-800-391-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Hooters, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, professional grade caulk, sealants, and adhesives. Complete battery source, every battery for every need, and 101 WRIF.
Yeehaw! Hey, it's Chief Charlie here from Mark Chevrolet. Hey, you like me. You really, really like me. And if you thought they had good reason to call me Chief Charlie before, look what Mark Chevrolet's got going on this month. It's still summer, and the deals are hot. Not humid, just hot. So while you're listening, I'm over here glistening. Now, get 05 Malibus for just $159 a month with $18.75 due. 05 Trailblazers, just $209 a month with $18.75 due. 05 Tahoes are just $249 per month with $3,200 due. And get the new 2006 Cobalt for just $199 a month, which is $500 down. Now the fun part. GMS is not for everyone in 06. All payments include secure deposit, away for lease loyalty, includes all CCR bonus cash and down payment to achieve specified amounts to its signing. SA, B, and CT only. Chevy, an American Revolution. Remember, the great cars are right here, and Chief Charlie's message is clear. If you like that new car smell, we got a car to sell. Mark Chevrolet on Michigan Avenue in Wayne. Get there.
Ford Motor Company, General Motors, Daimler Chrysler, and the Riff Rocks.
Thank you.
101 WRAF Detroit. Tiny Tim here. Beautiful Monday morning to you. Thank you very much. A little Alice Cooper for you. Well, you find folks that tore it up down at the State Fair College.